Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. And in case you haven't heard, the Cubs are going to the World Series.
I thought the W was for Wendy. I've seen it all over.
The city loves you, now more than ever.
Congratulations. I just want this over with.
No, don't say that. Don't say that.
Take a four-game sweep. That's fine with
well,
me.
Well, you know what, really? Wouldn't be bad.
I swear, I really never thought I'd hear those words, that the Cubs are going to the World Series. And I've heard it a lot of times over the last couple of days. And every time I hear it, I go, wait, is that possible? Could that be true? And it is true. It's going to happen.
Are we finished with Steve Bartman now?
I would like to think so.
I mean, come on. Now
I really would like to think so. I don't know if you know this. I don't know how much of the game you watched, but in the ninth inning, a ball was hit to that exact area.
On the other side.
Right.
It was on right field. You're right. I saw that, and I texted out to my friends. Whoa.
Don't touch it, boys. Don't touch it, kids in the crowd. Please, don't touch it. Don't touch it.
But are you talking about the one, though? There was one that bounced up, right? The ground rule double bounced in.
No, not that one. Oh. There was one in the ninth inning that went almost to the same general direction. And
Right.
That one was making me... I don't know.
I just thought it was going to unleash some torrent of...
Right. But you know what? It was... Because I always say to myself, when during the process of a championship can you really enjoy it? You can't really enjoy it during because it's so tense.
Yeah.
You know, and I felt this way with the Blackhawks. I'm sure you did too. When they were on one of their runs for the Stanley Cup, you go, I want to enjoy this, but I can't. There's so much going on, and one goal or one run could mean everything. And in this game, in game six, they had a 2-0 lead after one inning and a 3-0 lead after the second. And I just kind of went, boy, this just seems destined. They're beating the best pitcher in baseball. This just seems right.
I've had the weirdest reaction this year. I mean,
what do you mean?
Well, because I mean, I'm a giddy Cub fan and season tickets, and you know, but I'm just not as swept away with the giddiness this time because I finally came to realize this weekend, I just fully expect it.
Yeah.
And every other time when the Cubs have done well in 2003 or 84, it was like, oh my, this is going to happen. Can you believe it? And
yeah.
This year, I mean, I'm very happy and I'm not. Whatever, but I just expect it. I just think that they're so good that it's going to happen.
It is a phenomenal team. My son Michael had a gig that night, and the Cubs game was on, and the Blackhawks game was on, and he was bothered that no one was paying attention to him playing.
Yeah.
Well, I said, well, wait till the game's over, and then, boy, we were part of the party.
Yeah, yeah. That's the right way to handle that.
You know, that's what's happening.
Kevin shared a strange moment with me. I hope, Kevin, this is okay to tell. I know how personal this is.
Did he say not for air?
No.
No, I think it's fine.
His grandfather, this is just sad, but I think it says a lot. What happened when your grandfather was on his last few days?
As I'm told, when my grandfather was on his deathbed, he apologized to my dad and uncles for raising them Cubs fans.
Think about the mechanics of that. You realize you're Kevin's grandfather, and you realize you only have a few days left. It's as sad can be, and you need to make amends. You need to right any ships in your life. And what he was concerned about with the family was that.
So I'm thinking about them for this. That's why I'm excited.
Well, that's part of what went on the other night is there's a realization in your head that so many people live their entire lives just wanting to hear those words, the Cubs are going to the World Series, and they never got to hear them.
I think that's why they're winning. I had a family friend who was just an unbelievable Cubs fan, Betty Kahinka. She loved the Cubs, and every time she'd come to visit, she'd bring her little Cubs bag. And, you know, I kind of accidentally started my kids saying, you know, oh, Cubs bag, that doesn't belong in our house. But she played it. She just loved
it.
She knew we were Sox fans.
Yeah, right.
And she passed away earlier this year, so unable to see this happen.
Yeah.
The Cubs greats. Ron Santo's been pulling strings for how many years? I just feel like maybe there's more Cubs fans up in heaven right now really pulling the, you know?
Yeah. He's one of the names you think about. Ernie Banks
lived such a
long, fantastic life and saw so many things and then just missed this.
I know.
You know?
It hasn't happened yet, guys. When's the last time they made it to the World Series?
45.
Yeah.
All right.
They lost. And you know what I didn't realize until they pointed this out? That from the time they won it, and that would have been 1908, till their last appearance, which would have been 1945, right, Steve? Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
All right. they were in the World Series 7 times.
Really?
In that span. Yeah, for some reason in my head I thought I think there was only 2 or 3 times in that span, but no, it's 7 times and lost all 7. That's crazy. I mean, there's got to be some law of averages in the universe.
It depends how good your team is, and this is one of the best teams ever.
That's it. No, that's true.
So
that's true. They have the best hitting team in baseball, the best pitching team in baseball. They, I think, one of the best defensive teams in baseball.
They deserve it.
There's no weak spot on the team.
I just want it over with. Really.
Why?
Because the Cubs always get the attention. Now they're worthy of it. I'll give you that.
All right.
But I just want it, you know, let them win. Then we move on. Need to start the Sox season and do something next year.
Right. We got to start planning on raising the banner at Wrigley next year.
Hey, Ted.
Hey, Wendy. How you doing?
Good.
I have to tell you, I happened to tune into the game the other night at the exact point with one out in the eighth when they're coming to get the pitcher where we were like the last time we were close.
Yeah,
to this
know.
Point.
I know.
Which completely freaked me out. I was like, of all the times I get out of work to tune in right now. But then then you mentioned about that foul ball. And I was listening to the national broadcast that ESPN does.
Yeah.
And the commentator says, yeah, it goes into the stands over by the bullpen. And the color guy goes, yeah, there's something about that area over there. And immediately the play-by-play guy goes, you really want to go there?
Well, in the beginning, if you watch the game on Fox One Sports, they do this little montage that shows Wrigley Field and some Cubs highlights, and they showed the statues that are out in front of Wrigley Field, and they show Harry Carey. And then in part of the script for that kind of montage about Wrigley Field, they show those seats and they something to the effect of, and there have been some dark days or something like that. And I go, oh, don't. Keep this positive.
Yeah, exactly. Why keep inviting trouble about this? I'm sure there's probably something about a black cat and a goat. And
yeah, there
else.
Was.
I don't know all that.
There
yeah.
was.
Ted, thanks for calling. Are you a Cubs fan?
I'm actually more of a White Sox fan, but I really want to see the Cubs do it because, man, it's been a long time coming. And you know what? Quite frankly, they've earned it. So
absolutely.
I wanted to remind you guys of one thing. Yeah, I called you guys when they got the relief pitcher, Chapman, in.
Yeah.
So if this thing gets, I mean, they actually get the job, make sure we get those gun cabinets locked up so we don't have any, you know, kind of championship gunplay going on.
Oh, no.
Thank you, Ted.
Oh, no.
We have to take a break. And Dave, Maureen, Jerry, hang on. We are going to talk to you. 312-981-7200. It's Bill, Wendy, 720 WGN.
I'm going to say it again just because I like the sound of this sentence. The Cubs are going to the World Series.
It is weird to hear that. Now, I would like to hear the Cubs win the World Series.
That would also be a nice sentence to say, wouldn't it? Without crossies, without your fingers crossed and everything crossed. It just it was one of those things that when I was a little kid, the Cubs were really bad when I was a little kid. And I thought to myself, I bet when I get older, they won't be really bad. And I was wrong. They were. They were worse.
But, you know, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, it's just nice because I thought, like, remember, Steve, when you were 7 or 8 years old, you'd say, in my lifetime, I'll probably see the Cubs win the World Series a bunch of times.
Right.
But
no, never
it didn't
that.
Happen that way.
And so when 1984 came along, you know, I'm speaking for you, but we thought 1969 was so long ago.
Yeah.
Right? It was like ancient history.
Yeah.
And what'd they do in 69?
They didn't do anything.
They didn't get to the, they had a huge lead and they folded. The New York Mets just surged and overtook the Cubs. And boy, was that a mess.
So 84 from 69 was 15 years.
Yeah.
And 2016 to it's been 13 years since the 2003 debacle.
Yeah. That was the
Florida
Marlins.
So about the same distance in time.
But the Padres took us out in the series you're talking about where they had the lead. I was at the first game with Rick Sutcliffe pitching.
I was at the game too, Steve Trout.
Yep. But fate is a crazy dance partner, Wendy.
I know. I've danced with it many a time.
Fate has stepped on our shoes more than once while dancing with us.
Hey, Dave, maybe you're going to hit the nail on the head as to why Sox fans are supporting the Cubs. Go ahead.
Well, as I told your producer, the team is not a bunch of characters. It's a team with character. I'm not going to name any players, but when they take their own time and their own lives and go out and visit other people, children's hospitals, You know, it's not a bunch of just, you know, people saying they're one percenters getting, you know, millions of dollars to play a baseball game. They're showing their true colors. I don't want to get, you know, wordy, but
they're truly a team.
Yes. And it's loud and share their responsibility to everybody else. I mean, it's just not about baseball. It's about trying to help other people.
Is this your original thing, not a team of characters, a team with character? Because if it is, you should
that's so profound.
Copyright that.
Yeah, I know. It's probably like that three-peat thing where some guy in New York got it. Yeah, I should have copyrighted it. But I'm sure it'll be on somebody's T-shirt tomorrow.
But really, that's the most accurate thing I've ever heard. That's exactly true.
Thank you very much.
Okay, have a good day.
You too, Dave. Sorry, you wanted to keep talking. I know that's what you want to do. Anna, what do you want to say about the Cubs?
Well, I've seen the World Series. I've seen one game in 1945.
Whoa.
Yeah, they lost. It was in the upper, way in the upper deck, and it was cold and damp and wet. But anyways, it's quite a story how we got the tickets. My father had a restaurant in Niles Center or Skokie, what is Skokie now?
Yeah.
And we had a person from the government come in. And at that time, we were a bunch of girls that would used to go down to see the Cubs every Saturday and Sunday because it was only like a dollar and a quarter. And
that's what the prices are for game three.
$100,025.
Yeah.
No. Anyways, this fella got us the tickets, provided I squeezed fresh orange juice for him for 6 weeks. And that's how we got to see the game. And I can remember Bill Nicholson was right field.
Yeah.
Don Johnson was center. I can't remember who was left field. Stan Hack was third base.
Yeah.
Peanuts Lorre was outfield. Don Johnson was shortstop. And Phil Cavaretto was first base.
Yeah.
And Gabby Hartnett was
catcher.
The catcher.
Yep. What a team. Yep. Wow, what a great memory. And there was never a time, I bet, that you thought to yourself in 1945, I probably won't see this again for X amount of years until 2016. You thought, well, this will be the norm now, right? The Cubs will be in the World Series a lot.
And I also have, when we were kids, we got some bears. I got two bears with all the autographs at that time of the whole team. And, well, it's kind of faded. The only thing you can see now is Phil Cavaretta and Dan Johnson and Peter Peanuts Lorre.
Yeah.
But anyways, been a baseball fan since 1937.
How excited are you right now, Anna?
Well, I'm looking for a donated ticket.
Oh, all right. We all are.
Will you squeeze some orange juice for us?
Yeah, I'll come down and squeeze some orange juice for you.
All right. That seems fair. Well, Anna, we're wishing that you get to see a championship this time. We really are.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
Keep your fingers crossed.
So many. Yeah, but we used to go down to Wrigley Field all the time, and the one time there were like 46,000 people there. And my sister and I, we went down to get hot dogs. And of all the people that we ran into, it was our school principal from high school. And he didn't know that there were 12 more girls sitting in the
Anna, thank you so much and good luck. And real quickly, Maureen, you've been on hold. Go ahead and real quickly say this.
My cousin, who'd been a lifelong fan, Cubs fan, had died on Saturday.
Oh.
So we didn't get to see. And growing up in Buffalo, you know, we don't have any championships. So I really had wished he would have survived.
Oh, that's so sad.
I'm a Cubs fan for him, so it'll be fine.
He has a good seat now, at least.
Exactly. Thank you.
Thank you,
Maureen.
Should be a moratorium. I know this sounds crazy, but nobody who loves the Cubs should be able to die between now and the end of the World Series. It should just be forbidden.
All right, who do we take that to?
We got to find out. We got to figure that out.
Can Rahm Emanuel help us with that?
Yeah, he can sign a proclamation. All right, let's take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then we have a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, I have thanks, Steve. I have to say that one of the best parts of this job is that from time to time you get to meet somebody that you've admired for years and years and years. And several years ago, I got to meet Kevin Meaney, who was one of my absolute favorite stand-up comedians of all time. Just
a reckless abandon for making people laugh, a guy who took incredible chances, and he was so different, and he stood out so well. And I know that Kevin Meaney isn't a household name. He appeared on The Tonight Show. He appeared on all the late-night talk shows at some point. And he was also Uncle Buck in the TV version of Uncle Buck. He played John Candy's role in that. He died on Friday, and it was one of those things where I know that everyone goes through this with certain names. You just don't want to think of that person not being alive anymore. And it was just such a hard pill to swallow to know that a guy that talented who made so many people laugh over the years and was so original couldn't be on the planet anymore. And I miss him already. I missed him the second that I heard it. It was just such a punch to the stomach.
I had met him. He did a lot of work with Kevin Matthews when Kevin was on AM 1000. And there's a picture on Kevin Meaney's Facebook page of he and Robin Williams, which is really sad when you think about that.
Yeah.
He was found dead at his apartment. No further information at this point. And he has changed a lot over the years. He aged better. You know,
he really did.
But then I'm really upset because in CBS News, for instance, I looked at one of the obituaries and they put a picture from 2004. That sucks. You turn your life around, you look really good, and then they put a crappy picture from years ago.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they were doing. In the early days of Kevin Meaney, when he first burst onto the comedy scene, he would dress kind of like a carnival barker. He had a very bright... not always bright red. He bought this jacket in a myriad of colors, but he really stood out the way he dressed. He's one of the only people that was able to successfully pull off the bow tie. Always looked very sharp in a bow tie for some weird reason. I've got a couple of quick clips if you've never been exposed to Kevin Meaney's comedy in the past. I don't know that the first one needs much explanation. He would always just talk about his parents' reaction to him, his mom in particular, how his mom would react to his comedy bits. So here's a little bit of Kevin Meaney from The Tonight Show. I think this is either his first or second appearance on The Tonight Show. Listen in.
Anything in my house could poke an eye out when I was a kid. Be passing pizza across the table. You're going to take your brother's eye out with that slice. Now put your goggles on and go to bed. And stop rolling around up there. Rolling in the bed. Why are you rolling? Your brothers don't roll. Your father doesn't roll. You're like a crazy person rolling. Rolling, rolling, rolling. You're going to fall out of that bed and poke your eye out.
I don't know anybody who kind of brought forth their mom's voice the way Kevin Meaney did. And Louis Anderson also does an incredible job of that. I mean, everybody grows up with a mom saying the same things every day, and they just reflected it. Now, as manic as he was and as great as he was, from time to time, a joke wouldn't go over very well. And as you hear in this clip, when that happens, when he does a bit or a joke, he just doesn't care. Listen.
I don't care. I don't care. My jokes don't go over. I don't care. Everybody, I don't care. I don't. He does not care. I don't care. I don't care. I don't. He does not care. I don't care. I'm happy go lucky. Women call me plucky. I don't care. I don't care. Shut up. I don't care. Look out, Hank Mancini. Here comes Zini Meany. One more time. No! I don't care. We hate you. I don't care. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Bing, bing, bing. This is stupid. Making noises on the Johnny Carson show. You're like a crazy person. Why do you do this to your father and I? Thank you very much.
I hear a lot of inspiration in Louis Anderson's act from Kevin Meaney.
There's a similarity. There is a definite similarity. I told Kevin when I got to meet him, the only time I got to meet him, interviewing him at another radio station here in town, that song, that I Don't Care song, has played in my head ever since the first time I heard it. And have you ever been in a situation where somebody's telling you a story that just goes on and on, and you're like, how do I convey to them that I just don't care? That song plays in my head every day at some point. You know?
It's good to keep in mind, too, if you bomb at something, just to go, you know what? Tomorrow's another day.
Isn't that true?
Care. Yeah.
That's so true. I will also say this about him, and then, of course, we'll discuss other things. I had never met him before. I had seen him on television and hoped so much that he was a good guy because I just loved his comedy. And he comes up, and within 30 seconds, I felt like I had known him my entire life. We just hit it off, and we talked about everything and nothing at the same time. And it's just a huge loss. He was such a talented guy, and 60 years is not enough time.
I know. I just am not ready to die yet.
No.
I'm really not.
No. No.
It's all happening.
Yeah.
How do we end this death stuff?
There must be a way. We must find a cure for this death. That's the thing.
I'd like
we
to
must
do it.
Find a cure. So Kevin Meaney will be incredibly missed. I over the weekend I read so many glowing tributes from stand-up comics, I got to say, who are much headier acts, guys who really are much more thought-provoking. You heard Kevin, he was just kind of up there to be a fool and he played the part so well, and guys who were just really a lot more thought-provoking said, without guys like Kevin Meaney, you know, what is comedy? You need a guy like that to just be funny and crazy and zany, and he was.
And do yourself a favor, listeners, look up a bunch of YouTube stuff and watch him, because he really was really funny.
The clip I wanted so badly to play is he would do We Are the World. He would lip sync We Are the World, and he would become each of the people in We Are the World. And you can't play it on the radio because you'd just be hearing the song We Are the World. You have to see him, but he physically became, you know, everybody from Michael Jackson to Bob Dylan to Billy Joel to you name it, Cyndi Lauper. He just did them. So please find that on YouTube. Actually, let's put it on the Facebook page. You need to see it. It's one of the funniest comedy bits I've ever seen, but it doesn't play on the radio. But he was just so inventive, so talented. So we miss you, Kevin. We really do. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We're easy to reach, you know, 312-981-7200. I need to quickly thank a bunch of listeners who came out on Saturday. I did Jimmy Pardo's podcast.
Oh, yeah.
At Zany's in
Rosemont.
How'd that
go?
Phenomenal. It was really good. Really, really good. And a bunch of listeners said to say hello to you. And they always assume if they see me somewhere, you must be nearby.
At family weddings, people ask where you are. I'm not kidding.
I had
it's crazy.
About 15 or 20 people at some point see me and talk to me, and in almost every case, one or two exceptions, they just assumed you must be there. I'm out.
I should have gone. I should have gone to support you, but I'm just going to listen to the podcast.
Yeah, I don't know that it's been posted
yet,
but it'll be out, I think, later on in the week. But, you know, we had Jimmy on the show the other day, and I grew up with him. We were friends in high school, and I'm so happy for him. He's really, it's not easy to make a decent living doing these, but he has figured it out. He's been doing it for 10 years now, and he just does these, you know, these live shows that it's like stand-up, but it's not quite stand-up.
And he was, I know Adam Carolla was really the first one to find some way to make money with podcasts, but Jimmy Pardo's right up there.
He's doing all right. He, Mark Maron, and there's a few others that have figured it out. We told the story. It's Jimmy, and then he's got a co-host, Matt, who's up there, and then me. I was the guest. And we told the story about how when we first met, Jimmy was a friend of my brother, Adam's. And I thought that Jimmy and another one of my brother's friends were too cool to be Adam's friends. I wanted them to be my friend, so I stole them both away from my brother.
Okay, A, that's mean. Two, that's a slam to your brother.
Yeah, I guess it is.
They were too cool to be hanging with Adam?
There was some friendship envy where I thought, I really like these guys, and I think it'd be better for them to be my friend and better for me. I know that does sound terrible.
I know, couldn't you? Like, Jimmy Mack and his brother Billy Mack, or Shag as he was called in the 70s because he had a big Shag haircut.
Yeah.
They hung with the same kind of friends. They shared friends.
We didn't have that. We didn't have that, but
it didn't have to be, you know, one or the other. Couldn't you have all hung together?
Yeah, I think now in retrospect, looking back on it, there probably would have been a very equitable way to make that happen. But I remember in both those cases, upon meeting both of them, it sounds awful.
It does.
Doesn't it? But I just went, that would be a better arrangement if Jimmy or this other guy, you know, Joe, were my friend. So I don't remember how it happened that I finagled them both away, but I did. Boy, it does sound terrible, doesn't it?
A little bit.
I think what it was, and I'm not making excuses, But I could see that Jimmy's direction, like from the time he was in high school, he wanted to be. And for people who don't know Jimmy Pardo, he's had again, not one of those household names to many. But if you're a fan of Conan O'Brien's show, he was the warm-up act on Conan, and Conan would have him on all the time. He's been on a bunch of like reality shows,
really funny.
Game show host, very talented, very funny. I just thought his future is more my direction than it was my brother's direction. That still
sounds
awful.
Pretty bad.
It just sounds awful.
Can hear that on the podcast?
But I said to my brother, here's what I'll do. I'm going to take these two friends, and they'll be my friends, but now here's a list of friends that you can have. And I said, Ben, pick three, just to be fair. You don't think that's enough?
No.
It was like you know how teams will have rebuilding years? Where they'll go,
right.
You know what we'll do is we'll trade away our veterans for the hope of looking toward the future.
He must not have wanted them as his friends because he didn't fight you for them.
No, he was not happy about either Joe or Jimmy. He was not happy about relinquishing the friendship. He was not happy at all.
That's almost worse than stealing a girlfriend. Isn't it? These are friends that you talk about girlfriends with. Wow, you're cold. Big brother's cold.
Now, it's weird because when we told the story at Zany's the other day, the crowd kind of... They were like, yeah. And Jimmy even said, now this will sound even worse now that I say this to you out loud. But Jimmy said, I think it's an arrangement that worked out for all of us because you and I speak often and I haven't spoken to your brother in over 20 years. So
how's that a good thing?
Yeah, I know. Now that I think about it, that makes it sound worse. But at the time, I don't know, for some reason, when we explained this to the audience, the crowd gave us kind of a, yeah, we get that. It's a better friendship for him and for you. And my brother got like I don't know what he got out of it, but I'm sure he got something. It's been years.
They were just being polite, the audience members, singing, I don't care.
That's what they were singing.
I don't care.
It does. Now that I think about it, it does sound really cruel, and I've not done it since. I would never, I'm trying to think if I have done it since.
What else have you taken from him?
Yeah, I have.
A bike?
No.
Money?
I wouldn't take, no,
a
those
pet?
Are, those are tangibles. I would take a friend, but I would not take a bike or something. But I'm trying to think now if I've done that. You know, I remember my parents doing that with a couple once. They went to a party and they met these people that they liked more.
Now he's blaming the parents.
And they said, you know what? We should hang out with them instead of them. And I think they did after that.
So you learned it from your parents.
It's
You're
genetic.
Blaming them.
It's genetics. I had no control over it.
I love when people have to blame someone else for their...
I feel guilty now. But it's been 35 years. I mean, there's no way to make amends on this at this point.
Give him back.
I can't... Not now. He's a big success.
Now it's even more important to give him back.
No, I can't give him back.
And then Adam's going to go, I don't want sloppy seconds.
Yeah, never work.
You have to find him a new friend or two.
I'm not giving him Grant Mulvey, if that's what you're getting at. That's not happening.
It would only be fair.
That's not happening. No. I'll give him some borderline. I'll give him Steve Dale.
You are like mean.
I'll give him Steve Dale.
Actually, you're nicer than I thought because I thought you were going to say you were going to give him me.
No. Would that work? Do you think that would work?
Sure.
Here's my brother's phone number. Call him after
the show.
I'll
call him.
Just call him. All right. We'll take a quick break. It does sound bad. I know it sounds bad. Like it's me listening to it. I'm going, oh, that sounds terrible. But the arrangement worked out, Wendy. Trust me. You're going to love my brother. You guys are going to hit it off. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
How bizarre, Bill. It really is.
So accurate.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And who doesn't like a good story of crazy things that happen around the world? Atlas Obscura is the best-selling new book, an explorer's guide to the world's hidden wonders. And with us in the studio, Ella Morton, you are one of the co-authors of this book, correct?
That's right.
And Dylan Thuris, founder of Atlas Obscura and the Obscura Society, and you've helped with this book as well.
That's also correct.
All right, so freaky things. We were looking on the website, atlasobscura.com. There are crazy stories all over this land.
It's true. Wherever, both halfway around the world and in your own backyard.
All right, and we're going to focus on some of the Chicago ones. I don't know where you want to begin. First of all, I just want to say if people need something to do tonight and want to be wowed, there's a free event at the Highland Park Public Library. You guys are going to be there from 7 to 8:30 tonight?
That's right.
All right, cool. All right, what do we need to know about Chicago? What are some of the crazier things?
I think one of my favorites that's just, you might stumble upon it and wonder, what is going on here? In the Redgate Woods, so just in the southwest, there is a tombstone, and it's marked with the inscription, "Caution, do not dig." And the reason for that is that beneath this tombstone is buried a bunch of radioactive waste that is the leftover remains of the nuclear reactors that were built as part of the Manhattan Project beneath the football stadium at the University of Chicago in the 1940s.
So it's, you don't have to call Julie before you dig. You just don't dig this because radioactive. Do you believe that?
I believe it's true. I would advise against digging, certainly, but Geiger counters have been used in the area. It's not hazardous to human health. But there is some radioactive waste there.
But that's one of those stories that as soon as you hear the very beginning of it, your imagination just runs wild thinking, what could that possibly be if on a gravestone it says do not dig? That could be anything and none of them are good.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So to find out the rest of the story in that particular case, what sort of what homework do you have to do to find out how it gets from the beginning to the end? Who do you contact to know why that sign is there?
Well, the reason that we know about a lot of these things is that we have this incredible community around the world of Atlas Obscura members who are out there exploring and finding things like this. Mm. And then they write into us about it and say, hey, do you know about this amazing place that's in my neighborhood or in this place that I've been traveling? So we get a little write-up from them and then we start to investigate. And that can be via, if it's like a small museum, talking to the museum owners or looking into the backstory. For this, there was a lot of historical research because it was part of the Manhattan Project. But it's always a fascinating process to dig into these little tidbits of information.
And there's no time limit. Like, it never says do not dig up until 2050. No. It's just for the rest
of
civilization.
Always.
It's a bad idea. That's a long time.
Do not dig.
That's a long time.
So, Dylan, you founded the Atlas Obscura and Obscura Society. Did you just like weird and crazy things when you were a kid and thought, I'm going to keep this going as an adult?
Kind of, yeah. I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Minneapolis, and my parents would take me on these road trips. And so we'd go to these like classic roadside places like the Corn Palace or Wall Drug. Went to a place in Spring Green, Wisconsin called the House on the Rock, which is one of the craziest,
you've talked about that,
most
Bill.
Amazing places. Have you been there?
I've not been there. God. I've only heard about it.
You have got to make the trip. It is worth it. It's this collection of collections. It takes like 6 hours to get through. Inside the building is a sculpture of a squid fighting a whale that's the size of the Statue of Liberty. This is in the house. It's the world's largest carousel is in there. Yeah. There's a room that's made to look like it goes on for infinity.
And the infinity room.
Yep. That's just like poking out over the forest below. Anyway, so I went there when I was like 12, and it really stayed with me. And then over the time, as a teenager, I kind of spent time exploring abandoned buildings and that. And so later on, I met my co-founder, Josh. We worked on a different project. I was heading off to live in Budapest for a year.
Yeah.
We started talking about how hard it was to kind of find these, you know, small museums or crazy, you know, outsider art projects where someone built a castle in their backyard. And so we decided, let's make a website where we'll put what we know about, but then other people can kind of add their own ideas and maybe we'll start to, something will grow out of that. And what we found is pretty much immediately there were other strange weirdos like
there's
ourselves.
There's no shortage. I mean, you look at the website, there's thousands and thousands of these.
Yeah.
That's a good thing for you for business, huh?
It is. It's wonderful. It's been, we are over 10,000 places in the world now on the site.
Wow.
And every day people send stuff in and there's usually at least one that we look at and we go, how had we never heard about this before? So,
Bill, you are obsessed with underwater phenomena and weird creatures.
Yeah.
Ella, do you have any stories about strange things under the sea?
Ooh, I know that. So one of the things we adore is bioluminescence, when animals glow.
It's
so
pretty
amazing.
Cool.
So in Toyama Bay in Japan, there are these firefly squid that if you go there at the right time of year in the bay, you will see it light up in this beautiful glowing blue.
Yeah.
And if you go out in the fishing boats in early in the morning, you can see that. It just looks incredible.
My daughter was in Costa Rica last year, and she said that she was there for she was working with turtles, and she said that for a period of the year in Costa Rica, even though it's the darkest part of night, because of the phosphorescence you just described, the water glows blue at night, and your eyes just don't accept it as being real. It's so foreign to us.
It's otherworldly. Like that.
Yeah. Obscura just means out of the norm, doesn't it?
Yeah, hidden, sort of not in people's general awareness. Yeah. And that really, it ranges enormously. It ranges from, a tiny museum that people don't know is there, where one person has been curating a collection of nuts for 20 years, to a giant, burning hole in the Turkmenistan desert that's 200 feet across and has been on fire for 45 years. These are kind of the, things on either end and within all fit in Atlas Obscura.
I remember when I was a kid, there was a show on Rod Serling's Night Gallery, and there was one episode called Camera Obscura. I had never heard of the phrase before, but from then on, anytime I hear it, I go, I got to pay attention. I love this sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the riff. The riff is on Camera Obscura, which is like a darkened room, basically.
Yeah.
All right, we have some listeners who want to talk to you. Ella Morton and Dylan Thuris. These guys have put together Atlas Obscura. It's this giant book sitting right there.
It's beautiful. It
came out in September?
Yeah. September 20.
Yeah. All right. Mary might have something for you, and I don't know if you guys have heard of this. Mary, meet Ella and Dylan.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Ella and Dylan.
Hi, Mary.
I have been fascinated for many years now by the fact that in Yorktown Mall in Lombard, Illinois, suburb of Chicago, in the parking lot, there is a small cemetery.
Yes. Oh, what? Wait, I have shopped there for years and didn't realize I was walking over someone's remains.
No, it's little. It's kind of fenced off, and it backs up to, I guess, Butterfield Road or whatever that's called out there. But there's, 10 or 12 gravestones in there, and I would like to know why it's there.
So this is amazing, because we had a Chicago event last night and someone came up to us and said, did you know that there is a small cemetery at O'Hare? And we said, what? She said, yeah, it's this cemetery from the 1830s that is just hidden in this airport. And we have found this, that there are these strange locations for cemeteries. There's one in a Walmart parking lot somewhere.
Yeah, and there's one where the cemeteries are actually, the gravestones are embedded in an airplane runway, in an airport runway. Basically, the problem is it's difficult to move cemeteries. And as development happens around them, oftentimes it's more work to disinter the bodies, to go through all the legal troubles.
Sure. And remember Poltergeist, by the way.
And remember, right. So they just leave them. I mean, that would be my, I don't necessarily know about this specific one, but my guess would be like these happen because it's just easier to leave the tiny cemetery and build the parking lot around it.
It does look like that's exactly what happened, that they could not get permission or whatever, and so they just went ahead and built the parking lot and fenced off the little cemetery. It's very small.
Please send this into Atlas Obscura. This is what we live for. This is why we do this, for people to tell it. Like, that sounds perfect. It's amazing.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Mary. And how do people send things to you? Where do they go?
Yeah, so if they go on the site, they can click add a place, and then they can start to submit.
AtlasObscura.com.
AtlasObscura.com, yes. Mm-hmm. Or if they could also send us a tip to info@AtlasObscura.com.
All right, you guys are going to be, you had an event last night. You have another one tonight at the Highland Park Public Library. It's free from 7 to 8:30, 494 Laurel Avenue. That's in Highland Park. We're going to take a quick break, and then I believe other people want to chime in with some oddities here in the Chicago metro area. It's Ella Morton, Dylan Thuris. We're talking Atlas Obscura. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. Atlas Obscura is the name of the book, an explorer's guide to the world's hidden wonders, and there are plenty here in Chicago. In the studio is Ella Morton and Dylan Thuris. They're going to be at the Highland Park Library tonight from 7 to 8:30. It's a free event. Go by and be wowed. And we have some listeners that want to talk about some strange Chicago places. Is this Nikki?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Nikki.
Hi. I know about the Yorktown graveyard. It's on the south side of, in the parking lot area. And the deal is this: the farmer who sold the land to build this big shopping center said, you can have the land, but you have to keep this aside for my family because this is where they've been buried.
Yeah.
And my understanding is the family, other family members can be buried there still. So yes, there's a small cemetery that was part of the deal he cut to buy this, to get my property. You can have it, but you got to keep the cemetery there.
Wow. I have,
and I, I believe the same thing goes with O'Hare. I believe that family cut a deal too, where the it had to stay, and now they're in the process of moving or thinking of moving it. There's some discussion along those lines of moving it, I understand.
Wow, there really are like headstones in the runway. I've never noticed that.
No, this isn't.
Yeah, there's an area at where the runways are that's kind of set off to the side. That's a cemetery, but there is discussion of moving that now, I believe.
Yeah.
If I read it correctly.
Well, Nikki, thanks for that information. Why do you know so much about cemeteries?
Pretty weird. Now, I lived in Lombard, and so that was always kind of the strange thing. And unless you really look, you don't see it because it's just an odd little quirky thing about Lombard.
I've been to Yorktown a million times and I've never seen it, but I will look for it.
This is kind of the thesis statement of Atlas Obscura, is that like there are these things that are just tucked right around the backside of some building, and it's like the only people who even necessarily know it's there are people who've lived there and happen to come across it. And even then, it's kind of a word of mouth sort of thing. So,
Dylan, you talked about growing up in the Midwest. You visited all the touristy attractions. So you may be the first person to correctly know the answer to this because I don't know it. When you'd go to the Wisconsin Dells, they have this house without gravity or house with no gravity. That's impossible, right? That's just a trick. They're messing with our heads.
I will say this is not the only house like this in the country. There's another one in Oregon. And the mystery houses or houses without gravity are wonderful places where balls roll uphill.
Yeah.
And you stand at a crazy angle and yes, I think the magic is happening not so much in gravity as in your mind.
Okay, good. Because I went there when I was 7, and I'm still trying to figure out how the things were possible that I saw there.
Yeah. So do you want me to ruin the?
Don't ruin it. Yeah, I think you've said enough.
Okay.
What about when I was a kid? There was a place called the Winchester Mystery House. Do you know about that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's a famous place. That's down just outside of San Francisco in San Jose, I think.
Yeah.
And the story is that it was built by the wife of the Winchester Empire, basically.
They made guns and rifles.
Exactly. Yeah. This, you know, famous rifle that was used to sort of, you know, win the West, but obviously killed many, many, many people. And the story goes, it's a little unclear whether this is sort of true, but that she was haunted by all of the people who were killed. She would hold seances. And she built this house that is definitely, what is certainly true, is that it is an architectural sort of oddity, monstrosity. Yeah. It's
hallways that lead to nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. Little tiny rooms sort of within other rooms. And it's this twisting mess of kind of crazy Victorian architecture. And so, yeah, and they run tours through it, and there's a lot. They have a lot of sort of folk legends that surround it.
And they built it that way to confuse the ghosts.
This is the idea. That was the idea, is that Sarah Winchester built it to sort of. She always had to keep building, so she just had builders employed for her entire life, sort of adding on bits and pieces and all of this.
Yeah,
I think there was a report just a few weeks ago that they had found another room in the Winchester Mystery House after all these years. So they definitely concealed it very nicely.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't want to blow up their spot, but I would put found in quotation marks.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. They do their thing.
Yeah.
And you were saying something off the air, Dylan, about there's some kind of temple in one of our high-rises here in Chicago. What were you talking about?
The Chicago Temple, sometimes called the Sky Temple. And basically, it's the highest church in the world. It is a Gothic temple on top of a downtown skyscraper. It was the site of the early Methodist church built in the 1830s. And essentially, when they redid it, they built, you know, a modern skyscraper, office space to house sort of all the Methodist offices. And then at the top, they built a classic Gothic cathedral. And you can go up there. They give tours. You know, there's a tiny chapel space. And they have these windows, these stained glass windows that you can open and, like, look out across the city.
That's incredible.
It's right here. I mean, people...
It's in the Tribune building, somebody just said.
Right across the street?
It's, like, right here. It's like, very, very close. And I think people don't even have any... They just... You walk by it, they don't see it. Actually, the kind of the most amazing part of that is there's a 3-floor penthouse for the minister there.
Oh, really?
Which is like, super sweet. It's probably one of the best apartments in Chicago.
It's the First United Methodist Church Chicago Temple building,
That's
not Tribune building. I saw it and freaked out. I'm freaking myself out.
But it's right here. It's very, very close. You could walk to it in, you know, 5 minutes from here.
All right. Anne has some oddity as well she'd like to share. Hi, Anne. We're talking to Ella Morton and Dylan Thuris of Atlas Obscura.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. It's good to talk to you people. I was going to tell you about it's not an oddity, but there is a Illinois Valley Community College is the name of the place that this barn is located on their property. And it was given, the property was given to them with the understanding that they could not tear the barn down. And it's a gorgeous barn. It's located in the colleges in the outskirts of Oglesby, Illinois. And it's right off of 251 going south out of La Salle, Peru. It's on the east side of the road, very easy to get to. And if you could work your way into taking a picture of it and telling about it, you'll find all the information and records, I'm sure, because they have to-dos about it every year because it costs so much to maintain. And they always try to get around it, but that was a stipulation when they got the land that they had to leave that alone.
It's an old dairy barn that they had to preserve in honor to keep that going.
I imagine that happens a bit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. The kind of like grandfather clause.
Yeah, sure.
Do you know if they use it for anything currently?
I don't think it's used for anything.
It's just an empty barn.
It's empty, but it's gorgeous. I mean, it is big and it is gorgeous. And I'm kind of glad that whoever had it, owned it, made that stipulation because too many old buildings. People go to Europe and they see all these older buildings, and they're maintained and they're preserved, they're updated. But in this country, the first thing people think about is, oh, we're going to tear it down and build something new.
Right.
And half the time, I feel that the newer places are not built as well as the older places.
That's totally true. Yes. The wood's different.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling, Ann.
You're quite welcome. You have a good day, and I love your program, Wendy.
Thank you.
You do have a good show, Wendy.
You too. I was just the one talking.
Come on. I hate to put you guys on the spot, but really quick, Ella, what's the one that you just cannot explain and it bothers you that you can't figure out what the answer is to this one?
Oh, wow. Well, there's a place that I've been to that you look at it and if you see a photo of it, you think it's something, and then the reality is so very much different, which is that there's a photo of it in the book. It looks like a nebula or a galaxy, all these twinkling little stars. And what it actually is a cave full of bioluminescent fungus gnats.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's excellent.
It's in New Zealand. It's called the Waitomo Glowworm Caves. Yeah. And you get rowed along this subterranean river. It's dark, pitch dark. And then all of a sudden, this what looks like a sky full of stars opens up. And they're all just these twinkling little gnats that are in their larval stage.
It's amazing. Wow.
I got one for you.
What is yours still?
North Minnesota, a place called Devil's Kettle. A river splits into two waterfalls, and one of the waterfalls flows on down normally in its little river, and the other falls into a hole or this kettle, at which point it disappears and no one knows where the water lets out
really?
From there. And people have been trying to solve this. People have been pouring dyes into the waterfall to see if the Lake Superior turns pink.
Yeah.
They put thousands of ping pong balls down there to see if they floated up somewhere, putting GPS on ropes. So far, no one has any idea where the waterfall actually flows out. Although I like to imagine that there's like a farm somewhere in upstate Minnesota where he's got like a pond filled with ping pong balls and it turns pink occasionally. And anyway.
How cool is it that you both pick places real close to where you grew up?
Yeah.
The whole world, and you pick the place right in your own backyards. That's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's part of what people, when they contribute to the Atlas, it's about remembering something from their childhood or having this real sense of hometown pride that they want to share this amazing place with the world.
Yep.
We really love that enthusiasm that people bring. Mm.
This is fascinating. Atlas Obscura. You can get it wherever better books are sold, and you can go to atlasobscura.com to find out more, share some information, and make sure you go see Ella Morton and Dylan Thuris tonight, Highland Park Public Library from 7 to 8:30. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
More after this. It's news next, and then more Bill and Wendy WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
We do sing the praises of Eric Zorn.
How can you not? Eric Zorn is here, feistiest columnist in Chicago history.
A great song.
Yes.
It's on Kevin's iPad. That's his iPod. That's why he was able to play it so quickly and easily.
I have to tell you, we had Dr. Ruth Westheimer in earlier this week. Last week.
She's Friday. Taller than I am.
No, she's shorter than you. But she's definitely feistier than you are. And
really?
Someone said you have to pick up the feist a little bit.
Okay.
She was feisty.
She was, Eric.
I have to adopt it. What is it? That Austrian accent she has?
Yes.
Work on it.
How would you sound?
I've been on it.
That's better. That sounds good. Eric, apparently this year politically has been a strange one. That's what I'm hearing. And people are tweeting about it, and you have compiled some of the more eloquent tweets.
Well, I collect funny tweets every week. I have a little reader poll that I do every week, and people weigh in. So I collect. Thanks. I collect 10, 15, 20, depending on how many I find. And I thought I'd pull out some of the better political ones this week while things are still seem funny.
All right. Wait, you lead us to believe that may change. Is that going to change?
It's at some
nothing
point.
Nothing funny about it.
Nothing funny about it. Although, right. I think Saturday Night Live has been pretty strong. They're opening skits the last couple weeks.
Sketches have.
Yes, the live open. The rest of it, it's Saturday Night Live. It's, 40 years old? It's
been pretty strong, but, other than the opening, I'm not that impressed with it.
Kate McKinnon is brilliant.
She's great.
As Hillary Clinton. Yeah. I think we're all hoping that she is able to stay on for the next 8 years.
But now you know that Donald Trump has said that it's time to retire the show, that it's no longer funny, and that Alec Baldwin is not doing a good impression of him.
I heard that he said that, yeah. I wonder why. I mean, he's a TV critic.
Yeah.
Should have won that Emmy.
Right, that's what he's
so
saying.
I was going to go. I'll go through these. This is like about 16 of my favorites from the year. Right. This one came from the primary season. It says the Republicans haven't got a single candidate who could survive a Willy Wonka factory tour.
Man,
here's one. Accidentally pressed 2 for Spanish, and Donald Trump's security team came out of nowhere to deport me.
Very funny.
Here's one from Peter Sagal, who's a local radio host, actually a national radio host. He's based here. Godwin's law is now suspended until conditions improve. Now, you know what Godwin's law is, right?
No,
Godwin's
remind me.
Law is this sort of informal rule on the internet that the first person who invokes Hitler is automatically
they
declared
lose.
The loser of the argument. So, so he says Godwin's law is now suspended. here's one also from the primary season. Not usually a big fan of God, but I have to admit, telling Ted Cruz to run for president, then making him lose to a reality TV clown was an A-plus prank. I've always known Trump University was a scam. That's why I went to their rival school, University of Trump. Sure, Trump may be unhinged now, but maybe he'll calm down once he becomes the most powerful person in the world.
Are these written by names that we would recognize, by the way?
Most of them not. I'll tell you when they are. Right. This is one. This is not about a candidate, but I liked it a lot. Ann Coulter has managed to say so thin because the last solid meal she ate was Hansel and Gretel.
Oh, no. That's so funny and so evil.
If Ted Cruz is out endorsing Trump, who's watching his bridge and asking strangers 3 riddles?
Now, does it say who that's attributed to?
It's Sam Grittner. He's a comedian.
I heard somebody else say that and thought it was really funny, but it wasn't Sam Grittner. It was somebody else.
Sam Grittner is very funny. He's a very funny. At Sam Grittner, if you want to follow someone very funny on Twitter.
You know what I'm really thinking good. Of? It's Pete. What's Pete's last name from Saturday Night Live?
Davidson.
Pete Davidson. He said at the last roast, if Ann Coulter is here, who's keeping the birds off of our crops?
The crows, yeah. The
crows off the crops.
That's good.
It's very funny.
They were really vicious to her, weren't
yeah.
they?
Terrible.
They were really vicious. How can millennials not relate to Hillary? She just wants to move back into the house she lived in the 90s.
That's great.
He says, Mom, is there a monster under my bed? No, honey, your room is completely safe. The monster is busy running for president right now. And this is from Betty Bowers, who's a satirical figure. The definition of patriot is any comedian who doesn't want Trump to win. Think about that.
Mm-hmm.
All that material.
Mm-hmm.
4 years worth. Trump TV show idea. Rigged. Donald Trump fails at things and blames everybody but himself.
Yeah.
And that's Stephen Colbert's tweet there.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump is trying to win this election the really old-fashioned way by campaigning as though women couldn't vote. Got just a couple more here. John Boehner must get up every morning feeling like a guy who missed a flight that crashed. Drinks Bloody Marys and laughs and laughs. This one was just from the other day. With 17 days remaining, Trump is frantically flying from one rally to another while Hillary is at home filling out change of address forms.
It's good.
And the last one here, Trump supporters. He says just what he means. Trump, I like to kiss and grope women without their consent. Trump supporters. He didn't mean that.
Very funny. All those.
A lot,
very,
of, good,
very
lot
good.
Of good material from this.
It's
from this
all over
election,
the place.
So.
You can't avoid it.
It really is. It's. This is the most interesting, most
dismaying election that I've ever seen by quite a bit.
All right. So when people criticize and they say about anyone in the media, from people who write for newspapers to people who host radio talk show hosts to anybody, they say, you guys, you ride Trump and everything he says all day, every day, but Hillary Clinton gets a free pass. Isn't part of that based on the fact that Trump is just a more colorful, more flamboyant figure? Love him or hate him, he's the one that stands out in the crowd.
Well, here's the thing about Trump is that he keeps stepping on his own message. And I don't think we haven't spoken since the debate on Wednesday.
Yeah.
What happened there was that he was doing okay, certainly by his own standards. He was doing okay. He was checking a lot of boxes, making a lot of points that the Republicans and conservatives like to make against Hillary Clinton. And then he steps all over it by refusing to say that he'll just abide by the election results. And there was a really simple answer that his surrogates, Kellyanne Conway, Mike Pence, his daughter Ivanka, they'd all been giving this to reporters. Like, they were saying, like, yes, of course he will abide by the results of the election. Not meaning that he wouldn't ask for a recount if it was close, but just saying he'll abide, he'll accept the results of the election. So, you know, they were all waiting inside Trump headquarters, you know, watching him get asked that question, going, come on, Donald, just hit the ball here. Mm-hmm. And he just takes a big swing and a miss, and he won't do it. And suddenly the headline for the next day is written. And, you know, he just can't stay out of his own way. Because, you know, you're in some ways you're right. There's so many stories about that coming out about Hillary Clinton's emails, about, you know, problems with her foundation, all these little things that have come out that just don't rise up to the top because Trump keeps making news. If he had just kept a slightly lower profile, stuck to his issues, stuck to his 100-day plan, stuck to the things that he thinks he wants to do, he might be doing very well. He might be heading the polls at this point.
Didn't he make it worse, though, the next day by almost correcting the error and saying that he would accept results? And then waiting a second and a half and then saying, if I win,
yeah.
Didn't that make it worse?
Yeah, well, I mean, his strategy right now clearly is he wants to inflame his supporters. He wants to get that hardcore base out there to really turn out for him. And he thinks that that's a way to win the election. Now, that historically, that just doesn't seem to work. That, you know, the polls tend to be accurate. The polls tend to know.
They're not rigged?
What's going to happen. They're not rigged. Even though he's been saying today that the media is making up these polls, that the way to win an election is by adding supporters, by bringing, and there are a lot of people who are in the middle, especially people who have tended to vote Republican, who are looking for a reason or excuse, some sort of a reassurance to vote for him. He could have done that, and you know, I think the Democrats are looking around, going, how could he have blown this possibility? This is what they call a change election. The country is ready for a change. The country thinks the economy is recovering too slowly. They think it's time for something new, some new fresh ideas. You got, you know, any generic Republican would probably be beating Hillary Clinton by 5 points, 8 points at this point. But he's managed to erode all of that by all the dumb things he said. I mean, it's not just the stuff that came, not just the Access Hollywood tape. If that were the only thing, that story would be over by now. He could have gone back. And we were even saying before the debate on Wednesday, if he manages to really stay under control, like he was in the first 20 minutes. Remember that? Did you watch the debate?
Yes.
First 20 minutes.
He seemed presidential again.
He seemed president, a little sedated, but presidential.
He didn't seem sedated.
He didn't interrupt her. He wasn't letting her get under his skin.
Huge control.
And you're thinking, and I was watching this going, uh-oh, this guy's finally got it. He's got the message. Third debate was very well watched. I think it was the second most watched debate maybe in presidential debate history, maybe third, something like that. It was very high. A lot of people were tuning in for it.
And then the wheels came off.
And then the wheels came off toward the end. He's calling her a nasty woman.
Wrong.
He's doing, you're a puppet. You're the puppet.
No, you're a puppet.
Yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievably bad discipline.
And it was like watching the open of SNL. It turned into...
It really did. And the thing about that kind of that lack of discipline, for my money, is that it's not just that it's bad politics. It suggests bad government. It suggests someone who wouldn't know how to run things. I mean, if you can't stay focused, if you can't control yourself when you're dealing with the huge issues in the world, you're going to be a disaster as president. There is something when you see that in the campaign, when you see him not knowing how to behave himself, it tells you what kind of president he would be, and he would be. It's a frightening idea, I think. I mean, this, you know, all issues aside, the fact that the guy is so impulsive
I am a blurter of all kinds. I will, a self-admitted blurter. I should not be in charge of anything. Because you say things sometimes that you should think about first.
Yeah, but you know, next to him, you're Solomon. You're someone who you think before you speak.
No, I don't.
You let other people talk usually, right, Bill?
Can I talk? Yeah, I can. Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it is something that is just shocking to watch. And now he's saying that the polls are rigged, the election is rigged. I'm not sure how he is setting up November 9th, because that's really, to my mind, I think the presidential race is over.
Yeah.
And the real question is going to be, what's this country going to look like on November 9th? Is he going to leave just this smoldering wreck from half the electorate that doesn't accept the legitimacy of the new president?
I promise you, the most entertaining concession speech, if we get one, we may not get one, but if we do get one, it's going to be the most interesting concession speech in history.
One little
he loses.
Right.
I mean, we don't know yet.
Well, there's one little ray of hope that I saw. Wait,
can you hold that thought? We have to take a quick break. Eric Zorin has seen a ray of hope. He will share with us what that ray of hope is in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Eric Zorin is here, writer for the Chicago Tribune. We need to ask you your take on the Cubs. It's so exciting.
But I have to give you my ray of hope.
Yeah,
first.
What is your ray of hope?
My ray of hope is that the Al Smith dinner last week. This is a white tie banquet in New York City where the candidates routinely show up before presidential elections. They each give a speech.
Yeah.
I think Trump gave a very harsh speech. He was booed, although he did get off a couple of jokes. And Hillary's speech was also kind of harsh. It was kind of an ugly scene. But the ray of hope is that apparently before that, backstage, the cardinal was with the two of them, and he asked them to pray together, and they did briefly. And Trump said to Hillary, he said something like, he said, "You're a very tough and talented woman."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Donald, thank you. Whatever happens, you and I have to work together."
How about this
moment behind the scenes where there was this glimmer of patriotic,
pretty lovely
reconciliation is going to happen.
And when you say the cardinal, you mean Lou Brock.
I mean Lou Brock. Cubs thing. The one thing that I want to say about that is there's a certain person who I think we should not mention his name, and he interfered with a foul ball 13 years ago.
Yep.
And every time we write about him over and over again, this person, I believe, when the Cubs win the World Series, they ought to put him on the bus. They'll obviously have one of those bus tours like the White Sox had through town. They ought to put him on the bus with the players. He is the long-suffering Cub fan.
He stands
for all 108 years. He suffered more than anyone.
Somebody said he should be throwing out the first pitch.
Cass wrote a column saying that
exactly.
The first pitch. I think it's too early. I think having him throw out the first pitch at the series is too early.
Because if they do lose, then people will still blame him.
Right. There he goes. So I think this person, and again, I hate dragging his name.
How about the
celebratory last pitch if they win? He'll just come out there after the game.
And toss a pitch.
Yeah.
Or they bring him in the ninth inning.
Yeah, let him throw.
Chapman's got two strikes. We're ahead by five runs. You can close this out.
That's great. All right, so he's in. All right, good.
And by next week this time, we'll be partying, right?
Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be a dream we've all had?
Get it over with. Win it already.
Wendy just
wants it over.
Wendy wants. Oh, that's right. She's a Sox fan.
But, I still want him to win. I just, I'm sick of hearing about it.
I'm going to move aside for Steve Bertrand like I always do.
He's here, and he demands attention.
Aside from you, Zorn.
Thank you, Eric. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We are playing Tom Jones music because there's high school kids in the studio, and high school kids love Tom Jones.
Do you love Tom Jones?
See what I mean?
You told them
to be
quiet.
Their faces. They love Tom Jones.
Right.
Yes, Nazareth Academy, LaGrange Park are represented right now. A bunch of freshmen, sophomore, juniors, and seniors, right?
Correct.
Little tour of WGN Radio and the Billy Goat Tavern.
Right. It's a tour. They all ask the same question. Is this really where Ryan Burrow works? Every one of them asked that same question.
They did ask that, Kim.
Amazing.
He's famous.
Yeah, he's very famous. The high school kids love Ryan Burrow. I have to ask you a question. Several people have asked me today where I was for the Cubs clincher for Game 6, and I watched it at home with my family. Now, this is a report I've heard, and I don't know if this is true or not. Is this possible that some of the bars in Wrigleyville were charging people $100 to go and watch the game on their TVs in the bars? Could that be possible? Anybody pay $100 just to watch a game in a bar?
That doesn't seem right.
No, it
doesn't. I can tell
you,
I went to the game and I was in Wrigleyville, and if they were paying $100, nobody cared because the lines were so incredibly long.
Really?
Every single bar, the lines were out the door.
All right, here's a stupid thing to wait in line, because who's going to leave when the game's going on? So you're just going to be standing in the street in line for the whole game.
Well, it was kind of early. I think that people were waiting to get a spot. They were
No one was leaving.
No, nobody was leaving. So if you weren't in, you were standing.
But this was a time where technology was a very good thing because there were so many people just kind of mulling around in Wrigleyville who couldn't see the game. Obviously, if you're outside of the stadium, you can't see. So you could see in the shots, in the long shots, people had, you know, everybody was watching it on their phones, basically. Right. So you couldn't have done that 10
who
or 15
years ago. Who needs a
baseball
field anymore? Seriously, just watch it on your phone.
My son was at a wedding, and they were watching it the whole time on their phone.
All right, now be honest.
I feel sorry for the bride.
I know,
that's what I was just going to
really
say.
Really sorry for them, too. But apparently everybody got it really excited when the Cubs won, and they started the band started playing Go Cubs Go, and they said it was really fun.
It's such a mixed blessing, because if you're the bride, you've waited for this day your entire life, and the groom, but more the bride. So then your day is finally there, and you can't say to the guests, hey, we're not going to show the Cubs game. This is my day, my wedding day.
You could say that, and then they will all filter out of your reception right. and go to the neighboring bar right. or something.
Or the bar in the hotel.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's just part of real life. Things yeah. happen that you're not expecting, and yeah. you make the best of it.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping they were Cubs fans.
Right.
Because if they were Sox fans, right. that's their wedding.
I believe they're Cubs fans.
Well, then
they
share in the excitement. Makes their wedding that much more special, doesn't
right.
it?
You'll always remember the year we got married was the year the Cubs went to the World Series.
The
that's
night of.
You tell your kids, yeah.
The night of is even better.
Exactly.
You were at the game, Kim?
I was.
All right, a couple of things. And okay. I only know these stories secondhand, but you were there. So you did Scottie Pippen mess up the seventh inning stretch?
Yes, he said
he
carrots
did.
And Cracker Jacks.
Bring me
Everybody
some carrots
like,
and Cracker Jacks?
He eats healthily. Come on, guys. What is it?
Bring me some carrots and
peanuts.
Crackers, right?
I guess. Boy, that's...
maybe he's got a nut allergy.
Although there are peanuts in Cracker Jack.
There are, right.
So
no
why,
carrots, though.
Why do you say peanuts and Cracker Jack?
Those...
Well, because they sell them separately.
Right.
I guess, but there are already peanuts. You could just combine the two.
But I think when that song was written in the 30s or 40s, those were the only two snacks available. I don't think they had invented other snacks yet.
No licorice ropes.
Nope. No Fun Dips.
He said
no.
carrots.
Carrots
he did
and
say carrots.
Cracker Jack. How did the crowd react to that?
Everybody around us was like, wait, did he just say carrots?
He should have called that out. Yes, I said carrots. Much better for you than the others.
Maybe Michelle Obama got under his skin.
All right, so there was that moment. And then also on TV, they never really explained if this is who I thought it was or not. But was there a Jim Belushi sighting just prior to the game? Was he on the field working some kind of weird voodoo magic on the
I believe that he was.
Yeah.
I might have had to been in the bathroom line at that point. But
because of
I
Jim
believe
Belushi?
That he was. Yeah.
I can't watch this. So you were kidding the other day when we were talking about which celebrities were at the Dodgers games versus which were at the Cubs games. And I said, strangely, Jim Belushi has not been in attendance. But for Game 6, the clincher, he was there.
Well, they showed him on the screen with and Eddie Vedder and John Cusack.
Oh.
John Duffy, our psychologist who's on the show,
yeah.
was in the bleachers, and somewhere along the line, he was able to high-five Eddie Vedder. He
Wait,
and his wife and his son.
That's a doing, because Eddie Vedder sits almost behind home plate. His tickets are there. He and John Cusack sit just to the left of the batter by home plate, so...
I don't
he must
know
have
where
really
they
made
were.
His rounds.
I don't know, because I think he was all over the place, that Eddie Vedder.
Maybe. Wow, good for him.
Unless Dr. John Duffy lied to us.
Well, they even showed Eddie Vedder somehow, because they were very careful on who they let onto the field afterwards. You really had to have not just press passes, but I saw vests, like these yellow vests that said photos and stuff like that. But somehow,
really?
Eddie, yeah, they were really careful. You could even see in one of the long shots just prior to the ninth inning, they had security guards lining up along the first and third base side. Could you see that, Kim? Oh, Kim doesn't.
Why did they let the people on the field? I mean, I know Eddie Vedder's a big fan and everything,
right.
but what does he have to go on the field?
I don't know. I guess if you're Eddie Vedder, I'm just guessing here, but you feel like I've done some things, I'm allowed in.
Not anything in the baseball. I guess he's done a couple of songs for the Cubs.
Right, right. I was almost not allowed to watch it on TV. That's the difference between me and Eddie Vedder.
Big
Cub
difference.
Management called up. You're not watching on TV. No. SVU. I got SVU on. I'm fine.
All right.
But what
well,
a night.
And, you know, I'm getting texts from earlier in the day where I said, can we just hurry this up? I don't mean it disrespectfully. I'm a Sox fan.
Right.
Yeah, whatever. This is great. You guys have earned it. But come on, let's get it over with already.
You don't want it to prolong any
it's
more than it
just
already...
that and the election. Two of the things I cannot escape.
I predict they'll both be over soon. You won't have to worry about either one of them after too much
All
longer.
Right. Then we can get busy on building a Sox team.
Yes.
That won't happen.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
All right.
A big, long show. Speaking of the Cubs, later on we found out last week that the Cubs have their own chaplain.
Which I thought was strange. Yeah. I really did. I thought, what, if somebody dies on the field, why do you need a chaplain there?
Right.
But I guess they do a little prayer session before the games. Certainly on Sundays they do.
Whatever they're doing. A tip of the cap to him. If Father Brooke Masters doesn't get a ring for this, I don't know. Something's wrong. He'll join us later on to talk about the duties, what the Cubs chaplain has to do on a daily basis, and a lot more. So stay where you are. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
A little something we should investigate. Do you remember when we left the air on Friday, all hell was breaking loose, and
yes.
Steve Bertrand doubted me and my ability to get on Twitter, and then he's like, I can't get on my account either.
Yeah.
And there was a big hack going on.
It's the strangest thing. It's a story that was on Friday. Everybody was so leery of what this could possibly mean. The internet had been hacked, basically, but it just kind of evaporated.
I didn't hear. All I heard, all I knew is as I was leaving, I stayed a little afterwards on Friday, and I was able to post my picture of Dr. Ruth on Twitter.
Oh.
So I said, oh, things are back to normal.
Yeah.
And then I heard Ro and Anna discussing it, and things were back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
So something happened in the morning. It was rectified in a couple of hours. Then a second wave came over, and that seemed like a few hours. And now what I'm getting, according to the Daily Telegraph, a Chinese security camera maker said its products were used to launch a cyber attack that severed internet access for millions of users at the end of last week, highlighting the threat posed by the global proliferation of connected devices.
That's what my guess was. Remember on Friday, I said, I bet that's what it is.
You didn't say it either.
No.
The attackers hijacked CCTV cameras made by Hangzhou Zhongmai Technology using malware known as Mirai. While Zhongmai didn't say how many of its products had been infiltrated, all cameras made before September 2015 were potentially vulnerable.
Wait, I'm confused. So it was cameras that did
video
that?
Cameras, like
So if websites were employing these cameras,
I don't know if they were just webcams on people's computers. The company has recalled some of its vulnerable products in the U.S., issued a software update. So evidently there was a problem with personal webcams.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Apple does all the updates for your phones and stuff for security hacks like this.
Yeah.
This hadn't been fixed since September of 2015. Why can't I talk? I've been hacked.
You've been hacked. All right, so here's a question. The first wave of these attacks happened on the East Coast. The second wave happened, I guess, throughout the United States, but I don't know that they happened in other countries. Do you? Does it say?
London, I believe, was mentioned.
Oh,
the attack took down sites including Twitter, Spotify, and CNN for long stretches, underscored how hackers can marshal an increasing number of online gadgets, collectively known as the Internet of Things, to disrupt the Internet on an unprecedented
scale. The worldwide
scale.
Internet?
Yes.
Okay.
But doesn't it seem weird? There was an outage all over. It's millions of internet users lost access to some of the world's most popular websites.
Oh, the list you gave out on Friday
was huge.
Yeah, it was gigantic. Huh.
The attackers hit Dyn, as Steve mentioned last week, a provider of domain name system services. And agencies, including the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, are investigating the outage, but the perpetrators remain unknown at this point. And all products of this Zhongmai said if they were made before September 2015, they were vulnerable because they ran an older firmware or software hardwired into devices. The company urged users to update their firmware, change their default usernames and passwords. I don't change my passwords as much as I should. Do you?
Yeah, no, nowhere near enough.
I know.
I only understood about 1/12 of what you just said.
Yeah, it got a little technical there, but they basically used webcams, and they were able to get in there. And
that wasn't an accident. That was their goal initially.
That was their goal.
They wanted to do this.
They took down a bunch of servers where that hosted all these websites, and there was a list of, I don't know, like 50 websites.
Yeah.
That you couldn't get on.
All right, so is this the kind of thing you can prosecute over? It must be, right?
If this they
is
find a crime. Out who did it.
But they always find out. Has there ever been a case like this where they don't track it? Like they find out whenever, remember when Target got hacked? Or remember that Chicago guy that was able to download the pictures from actresses' phones. Always find those guys eventually.
I don't know if they find them. I know that, you know, you have an IP address that they can figure out where it's coming from, but
right.
They're hackers. Aren't they going to disguise that in some way, shape, or form?
On somebody's show, and I want to say it was Steve Bertrand's show, I want to say, on the Wintrust business launch, somebody suggested that you change your IP address from time to time. I would have no idea how to do that. Would you?
No. I told you we were talking to Bridget Carey last week, and I bought this wireless hard drive. So you connect it to your router, and then you download an app on your computer or your phone, and you can upload your pictures on to this hard drive wirelessly. I can't make it work with my system. And it says, oh, here, try this IP address. I don't know how you can change your IP address.
I don't know what mine is. I don't know how you find out what it is. I don't know where it is. Is it 7?
No.
I did apply it early, so maybe it is 7. I don't know how to change it. But so many times, like if I have a problem with our system, you know, I go to my bill and where it says customer service, I call that number and they ask me a series of questions, none of which I know the answers to. There's not a single question they ask me that name. They go, who am I talking to? And I give them my name and then I go, that's going to be the last one I know. I don't know the rest of them.
What do they ask you?
They just want to know stuff like IP address, you know, that kind of thing where I go, who knows that?
Well, you can click on the computer and it says about and
well,
then
you got to know where to click.
I don't know where to click.
I got a new phone over the weekend.
Yeah.
What'd you get?
I can't get onto anything anymore because of all the passwords, you know.
Oh, right.
It's like, what was this one and what was that one? And
I know. And, you know, here's what I don't understand because, and I won't name names, but there are many people I know. I go, how do you remember all those passwords? And they say, I write it down on a little sheet.
Yeah.
And, or I put it in a note on my phone. Well, doesn't that kind of defeat the whole purpose? If you lose your phone and somebody goes to your notes and you look up passwords.
Yeah.
Well, here's how I can get onto your,
that doesn't help at all.
Dickie and Grandma Bank account.
You have a Dickie and Grandma Bank account?
Yes, I do. 2-for-1 savings.
Oh, that's not bad. Kylie wanted to watch the playoff games in New York on, she's got a web TV app where you can watch like satellite TV on your phone, right?
Sling?
So, no, it's not Sling. I don't know whose it is, but it's not Sling. So she called me and said, I need our user ID, I need our password, and then there was a third one, and I go, I don't know what those are.
Well, that's probably for your AT&T app or something, your U-verse.
Yeah, that's exactly
what it
is.
You don't know what the login is for that?
No.
See,
because you do it once and then, you know, you're done with it.
Right.
Yeah, but the U-verse is great because, like, right now, if I decided I want to record something that I forgot to set, you can go on the app.
You can do it by your phone?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
But you need to know the username and password.
You know I don't have a single app, right? I don't. I don't have even one
app. Do you have the phone app?
I don't even know how to I wouldn't know. I have no idea.
I am not good. I can figure things out, but apps really make your life so much easier. Except for the damn password thing.
Right.
I don't know if I should take this. Hi, Rick.
How you doing?
Confused.
Rick, Wendy's a little apprehensive for some reason. What's up?
Oh, no. The router. I use those wireless routers all the time. And basically, it's so easy to connect to it. Just turn the router on, then go into your Wi-Fi network settings. So say if you're at WGN and you're using their Wi-Fi, look for the name of it. So the one that I use is made by SanDisk. So I just look and it comes up SanDisk router and I click on that. And now the program that you've downloaded to work with it or the app, everything will work fine.
Except when I click on the little thing, like Personal Cloud, I think is the name of it. And there's just, it's light colored and there's a question mark. And when I click on it, it says not connected. I have tried.
You have to go into the Wi-Fi settings. So basically what you're doing is you're creating your own Wi-Fi network back and forth. It's basically the same thing of when you share photos from an Apple product to an Apple product. You turn on, what is that they call it, where you could share your photos with everybody.
Oh, family sharing or something like that.
Yeah, you just turn that on, and everybody can see your photos, but they have to accept it, and you have to send it to them.
Do you want that, though? Do you want everyone to see your photos?
No, because this thing, you can actually, like, I could have my own folder that is password protected. I just can't. It comes up on a wireless thing. It'll say Personal Cloud, but it's not making the connection. how it's so hard to explain, but I will be sitting on with support for the next
forever.
5 hours this afternoon.
Right.
Thank you, though, Rick. I appreciate it.
Okay, great. Have a good
I get a notice on my phone 5 or 6 times a day that says I can sync my contacts, and it's easy to do.
I thought you synced the Bismarck.
That's also, well, that was not as easy to do, but that was done years ago. But I don't know what I, first of all, I don't know what that means. Second of all, I don't know if I want that or not. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? What does that mean, I can sync my contacts?
It'll take all your contacts from your wireless devices and all your email accounts and sync them if you want them to.
Sync them how? What does that mean?
I synchronize them so
no,
they will
that,
go
but,
in your contacts.
But aren't they already in my contacts if I have
maybe
them?
Maybe not email addresses. Do you want the email addresses?
No.
The last time I sunk my contacts, I didn't want them there.
No, I don't think I do want them. But I get that, and then I say to myself, I bet there's an easy way to turn this off. Mm-mm. I've been trying for 6 months. I can't make it stop.
Look at that red number and tell people how many emails I have now, which I can't clean them up.
Wendy currently has on her phone 77,989 emails. Have you ever erased an email? Ever? Never?
I don't know.
That's a lot. Your phone is actually heavy. I can't even lift your phone because of all the emails you have deleted.
My house is cluttered. My phone is cluttered. I need someone to come
sure.
in and help me.
You know, you can sync your contacts very easily. Did you know that? We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then more show, including later on the Cubs chaplain. The Cubs have a holy man, a shaman, and we will talk to him. It's Bill and Wendy.
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Thank you, Steve. Earlier last week, I had mentioned I saw a picture on Facebook of a bunch of Cubs gathered around and a father that was leading a prayer service before a game.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that went on. Listeners were calling, saying a lot of times on a Sunday, if they're playing before a game,
mm-hmm.
there will be a team chaplain and he will lead prayer. And so we wanted to talk to the Cubs chaplain. And look who we have on the line, Father Burke Masters. How are you, Father Burke?
I'm doing great, Wendy, and you?
Good. I did not understand that each and every team has their own chaplain, and I think it's an awesome thing. How long have you been with the Cubs?
Yeah, so this is my fourth year serving as the Catholic chaplain. It's good to note that there's also what's called Baseball Chapel, which is a Christian, non-Catholic organization. They have chaplains for every major league club, and then I'm affiliated with the Catholic Athletes for Christ, which provides priests for every major league team. So it's pretty neat. I have a good relationship with the chaplains from Baseball Chapel and kind of work side by side and helping the players and the stadium personnel in their spiritual lives.
Do we know if God is a Cubs fan or a Sox fan?
Well, it looks like this year we
yes.
know what God's saying.
An easy question all of a sudden, isn't it, Father? Yes. Yeah.
I don't wanna upset all my White Sox friends out there.
Right.
No, that's true. But I never realized that each team had a chaplain or a religious leader, but it makes total sense to me, and when we found out about it, it was comforting to me.
Yeah, and it's really neat to think I go down what my duties include every Sunday home game. I go down to Wrigley Field and I celebrate Mass for both the Cubs and the visiting team and any stadium employees that want to come. So it happens before the gates open. So it's not open to the general public, although that'd be fun one day just to have a Mass for the whole
yeah.
stadium full.
That would be all right. Yes. And you only do this for home games, right, Father Burke? You don't travel with the team ever?
Correct. Okay. I don't travel at Sunday home games. And then after the game, I go down into the locker room and dugout and just make myself available to the players. Because, you know, we look at their lives and we think, boy, they've got everything anybody dreamed about. But they're also very young. They're making a lot of money. There's a lot of stress, pressure, temptations. And so it's a real ministry of presence, just being available to these men at times of great need sometimes.
Do you hear confessions from the players?
It's something that I do offer, yes. I mean,
yeah.
I can't talk about it. But
no, sure.
It's something that I make available to the guys and also the stadium employees. What I love about this ministry is, you know, like last Sunday, you saw the picture of Miguel Montero. And right next to Miguel is, you know, somebody who sells popcorn at the game. And in God's eyes, there's no difference. You know, God doesn't care how much money we make, what our job title is. But I think he cares about what's going on in our hearts. And that gets driven home at these masses that I have at Wrigley.
Well, baseball, of course, not only a physical game, but definitely a mental game. I would think that you could help comfort a lot of the people that have some things going through their head before the game starts, kind of that palate cleansing before the game happens.
Yeah, that's what I try to do, is just to be a calming presence, maybe to help keep things in perspective, both for the players and also for the personnel. And, you know, I played college baseball, and ironically, I played briefly in the White Sox minor league system.
Really?
I would have thought, yeah, the Padres.
Exactly.
Or the Angels, maybe, too.
there's some great baseball stories out there, right?
Sure.
You know, I like to help. You know, I'm a huge baseball fan, and I want the Cubs to win, but I'm also there to help people keep things in perspective, that if they win, great. If they don't win, remember it's just a game, you know, and the game of life is much bigger than the baseball game. I'm not downplaying that they're in the World Series, but ultimately, in the big, big picture, I don't think God cares how many championships we win, because he wants us to be the best people that we can be. And that's what my presence, what I try to bring, is that perspective.
Father Burke Masters is with us. He is the Cubs chaplain, as he's explaining. Father Burke, I'm sure you've heard this phrase at some point, the baseball gods. People say the baseball gods are smiling upon this team or that team, or they're looking the other way with the Cubs for 108 years. Is there such a thing as the baseball gods?
Yeah, having grown up playing baseball, I realized that baseball players, we can be very superstitious. You know, you hear of certain players, if they're going well, you know, they don't wash their socks or the uniform, and or if things are going poorly, like we saw Rizzo was struggling so bad, so he asked Caesar if he could borrow his bat. So there's a lot of superstition that goes on, and of course, as a man of faith who believes in one God, I don't believe in the baseball gods, so to speak, but I believe that you know, certain things happen. There might be luck that goes one way or another, but I don't believe in superstition.
Yeah.
So you didn't tell Rizzo to switch bats? That wasn't your idea?
No, although I completely understand it. You know, I remember being in college and I got into this bad slump, and I went to one of my coaches. I said, just pick out one of the bats here, because the one I'm using isn't working. And ironically, the bat I used, I got a hit, and I got out of the slump. So
nice.
Sometimes it's just a matter of a change, you know?
Sure.
What I'm doing isn't working, so I need to change something.
Father Burke Masters on the line with us, Vocation Director for the Roman Catholic Diocese of Joliet, now chaplain for the Chicago Cubs for the last four seasons, you said?
Yes, four seasons.
All right, Tony is on the line with us and has a comment. Hi, Tony.
Father Burke, it's a thrill to talk to you again. It's been about 35 years, I think. Me and Father Burke and I should say, won a state baseball championship together in grade school.
Congrats. That's wonderful.
Wow.
And, yeah. Father Burke is a great athlete. I know, Father Burke, you remember who this is or no?
It's Tony?
Yes.
Bagley?
Yes.
Nicely done. Okay. We have a prize for the father, Kevin.
Yes. There are two Tonys on the team, and I've seen the other Tony recently. So,
and Father Burke and I went to a Cubs game, ironically enough, about 40 years ago. You remember that, Father?
I do. Who would have thought we'd be where we're at today, right?
It's been a... Huh?
Who would have thought we'd be where we're at today? And you know, when I became a priest, I thought I was giving up baseball, and God's brought it back.
Wow.
Bring it back in just a different way.
Well, Tony,
I just wanted to chime in and say hello. Thank you, Father Burke.
Great to hear from you, Tony. God bless you.
Bye, Tony.
Thank you. Bye.
Listen, I am proud to be a Catholic. I should practice my Catholicism a little bit better than I do, but you know, it's a feel good, and for people who are spiritual, it really does mean something. I mean, even Tony just calling you was so excited to talk to you, and you played ball together in grade school.
Grade school, yeah, yeah. What a how great is that to hear from him? And we had some great, great experiences. And he said we won the state title our eighth grade year.
Nice.
So, yeah, baseball, like I said, when I became a priest, you know, my dream was to be a major league ball player. And then after I finished playing, I wanted to become a general manager. I wanted to be Theo Epstein before Theo Epstein. and God had a different call for me. I mean, it truly is a calling because it was not on my radar screen at all. And now to be able to do the ministry that I do at Wrigley Field and with the players and with the personnel, it's just a real gift. And I just feel honored to be able to do it.
Father Burke, tell us this. Cubs tickets are very, very expensive at this time of the year. Mm-hmm. The Cubs, they probably front you a ticket or two for the services you provide, right? I hope.
So I do have a pass, so I can get into any game. For the playoffs, I don't have a seat per se, but the ushers, most of the ushers come to Mass.
Yeah.
And so they take care of me by they'll bring a chair out in a section where I can sit.
Good.
Right underneath the press box, so I have no complaints. It's a great place to watch the game from.
Will you be going to any of the World Series
games?
Are
you hitting him up for tickets?
I'm not. I just want to make sure he gets to see the games. Jeez, that's all I want. But if you have an extra ticket, I mean.
I do plan on going, hopefully all three. Well, maybe if they win the first two in Cleveland, it may be.
Might just be two. That'd be all right.
I do plan on going to all the games here in Chicago, yes.
Do you have a bet with a priest in Cleveland? A lot of times you'll see the mayors will have a friendly bet between the mayors. Do you have a Cleveland priest have a bet on the series?
You know, this morning I was reading about Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. They have a bet going on now that, you know, Dwayne's with the Bulls. I haven't thought about that, but they do have a priest chaplain in Cleveland whom I know, so I may have to give him a call.
Sure.
What would be great would be to can celebrate to do a Mass together at one of these games. One of my good friends is the priest chaplain for the Royals, and of course they won the World Series last year, and I was so hoping that it would be the Cubs Royals last year, but it didn't quite materialize.
Yeah, almost.
And the Mets got us.
Yep.
So.
Well, you're doing a great thing. I mean, this team shows a lot of togetherness. As I mentioned, I know I keep saying it, I'm a Sox fan, but it's really good to see a team playing together. No superstars on it. They all work together very well, and you seem to be keeping them in the right frame of mind.
Well, and it starts with the top. You know, Joe Madden is just a great guy. He's a good Catholic himself, and it's just the way he treats every one of the players, but also the personnel in the stadium, the grounds crew with respect, and that carries over. The players pick up on that. You know, I was so happy to hear in many of their interviews, you know, they were, you know, talking about their teammates. It wasn't just a focus on themselves, and I think that's the beauty of this team. They're fun, they're young, they're entertaining, and, you know, it's not all about them, and I think that's why they're doing so well.
It really shows. And you have a daily blog with the day's scripture reading, along with a little short interpretation. Where do we find your blog?
Yes, it's F.R., as in Father, F.R. Burke, 23. That was my old baseball number.
you and Ryan Sandberg.
Yes, .wordpress.com. So F.R.B.U.R.K.E. 23.wordpress.com. And I try to bring in some baseball analogies when I write, too. So it's always – this weekend I had the opportunity to preach at the cathedral here in Joliet and was connecting how Theo Epstein and Joe Madden, you know, have kept their focus on the target. They didn't stray from their plan. There were no quick fixes. And to see how they've, you know, gotten to be so successful in just 4 years. You know, 4 years ago they lost 101 games. This year they won 103. Something's going right, and I kind of use that analogy and how we can use that same plan, if you will, for the spiritual life and keep our eyes focused on heaven and eternal life.
That's beautiful. It's so nice to talk to you, Father Burke Masters. I probably shouldn't read it. It's a text from a listener. Can you ask the good father to please curse the Indians?
Pray for the Cubs. Don't curse the Indians,
yeah,
right? Is that the way to do it?
Yeah. Stay positive here.
right.
It's such a pleasure to meet you. It really is, Father. We appreciate you talking to us, and keep up the good work.
Likewise, and if you're if you happen to be, you know, at Wrigley on Sunday, you know, working, and you're able to get into the stadium, we'll probably have Mass at 3:00 before a 7:00 game. If there is a game on Sunday.
I don't usually attend Mass, Father, but I will make a point of it. If I'm at the stadium on Sunday, I will see you there.
Okay.
All right.
I look forward to that.
Thanks, Father Burke. Good luck.
God bless you. Thank you.
That's Father Burke. literally doing God's work. I mean, we say that about people, but he really is.
Isn't it really sweet, though? He's this baseball player who wants to be a professional baseball player, joins the priesthood, and it comes full circle, and look at the gig he's got now.
I know. How about that?
He didn't steal his brother's friends.
No. I did. But he didn't. Let's take a break. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
People want to know Father Burke's website again. So it's FR, abbreviation for Father, FRBURKE 23.wordpress.com. I'm on it right now.
I love that he incorporated his jersey number from his playing days. Isn't that a nice touch?
It's really pretty sweet.
I know.
Something is making me be okay with the Cubs doing this well.
Can I tell you something that I saw during Game 6, that if you weren't pulling for the team, you would automatically be pulling for the team just for this moment alone? Everybody talks about how the Cubs teams of the past, when they've gotten this far, have been a little tight in the playoffs, and how this team is a lot looser. I will prove it to you. Late in the game, they show a shot of the dugout and three of the players. They're playing the song, you know, the Phil Collins song, In the Air Tonight, and it's got that drum solo. So they're all waiting. They're all on the bench. David Ross was one of them, the guy they call Grandpa. So it's him and two of the other Cubs, and they're playing In the Air Tonight, and they've got their finger up like,
wait.
And then when it gets to the drum solo, they all pantomime it together. And
That's pretty great.
With all that's on the line, these guys are in the dugout messing around to a Phil Collins song. That was fantastic.
Kevin, get that drum solo. We're going to do it later. That's pretty close.
Yeah. Thank you.
that was the most animated I've ever seen you.
I get excited. I get very excited.
Wow.
But you know what I mean, though?
It's like a lot
of guys would have been like, oh, God, all that's at stake. I got to just sit and watch and not move. But they were just loving it.
See, and that's what I keep hearing Joe Madden is doing, is, you know, bringing the fun back in baseball. Yeah, you got to win. I heard Kevin Powell talking to Steve Cochran this morning saying, if they don't win the World Series, this was a failure.
No, I disagree.
This season's a failure.
I disagree.
He said that because it's not a failure.
No,
it's
long
just,
from a failure.
You're not... You want to get to the end.
Right. You want it to end happy. We want a happy ending.
Right.
And that costs extra. When do you know that?
Do you have it, Kev? I can feel it. That's a great song. They all did it together.
They all did. Well, three of the guys did it. And I'm going, oh, that's, see, I know it's a kid's game. It's men playing a kid's game. But there's three guys just enjoying the moment for what it was. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah. It was great.
I can't help but not. I just.
Did you see the naked guys dancing in the clubhouse after the game?
Naked or speedoed?
Speedoed. But
there's a big difference.
But you didn't know, like when the camera was approaching them, I kept flipping around and I had Channel 9 on at the time. So Jackie Bang goes, "Oh, there's some guys in. Guys, watch. Be careful with the shot. Be careful because they're panning. They're moving around the players, and you knew they didn't have shirts on. But when the camera shot started, you didn't know where the clothes stopped or started." So Jackie Bang was like, we might want to go to a different shot on this. And it turned out they did have Speedos on.
They were players?
They were. It was the
what's
Cubs.
What's wrong with men?
I don't know what's wrong with
really,
men.
Keep your unis on, not your unitards.
Don't hate on the Speedos, Wendy.
It's their locker room. I know, but come on. There are cameras in there.
You're a hater. You're a Sox
I'm
fan.
I'm not a hater. I think it's fun, but...
Rhubarb were in there in Speedos, would you be okay with that?
Hot,
well, that's
baby.
A different story.
That's some pie.
I like my mascots in Speedos. All right, we have to take a break.
We need to take a break. All right, we'll come back. Steve has the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. You want to call in? You have a question or a comment? We're at 312-981-7200. Ryan Burrow joins us in studio right now to talk about a story that made both Wendy and I go, huh? What? Yeah,
right. It's this kind of never-ending Jared Fogle situation. This is actually his wife is suing Subway.
Ex-wife.
Yeah.
They are divorced.
Yes. Her name is Katie McLaughlin. She was married to Jared Fogle, had two children with him immediately after the allegations came out of this lewd
behavior. She bailed right away.
She did. Yeah. Right. As soon as he was pretty much, I don't know if it was at the time he was arrested, but she filed for divorce. It was finalized a year ago in November. So this was after he had already been sentenced. She has custody of the children. She managed to get $7 million in the settlement. Obviously he had a pretty hefty contract with Subway. And she got $7 million in the settlement there. But, now she's suing Subway because she said, you know, there have been news reports that Subway was aware of lewd behavior and allegations against Jared while he was working for Subway, and they did nothing about it. She also says that during this time, they used her likeness and the likeness of her children in commercials without consent by them. Now, they're still trying to work out and figure out, you know, is technically his contract work for her? That's part of the investigation that's going on right now. She's seeking, obviously, information. She says that, you know, eventually someday her children will be asking her, you know, what happened to daddy, and she wants to give answers, and she says right now she doesn't have that. Seeking some monetary return, but in Indiana law, you don't have to identify that, and they even said, as of right now, until we find out what kind of information we can, we don't know. But let's see here. This is just what she said today, kind of an emotional press conference.
There have been news reports that Subway received at least one complaint of Jared's sexual interest in children. Subway even took the step of marketing him as a family man and used my children and my likeness in that campaign.
It was a pretty emotional, you know, about 5 minutes where she spoke there. She was obviously tearing up and has been through a lot. I don't think anyone would deny that.
A quick question. She said at least one letter indicating that Jared may have a checkered past. Is that enough for a company to really do an in-depth? I'm not defending him at all. Mm-hmm. But if you're a company and you've had this campaign for years and years and you probably get thousands and thousands and thousands of letters, some good, some bad, is that enough for them to do some research to realize, we find out later what he is? But I don't know if one letter is enough.
That's what they want this investigation to find out, what they knew, how high this went up, how seriously this allegation was taken, if it was just, you know, rolled up and thrown into the garbage can, or if this went high up and people said, hey, let's squash this. Because her argument too is, you know, you kept sending him to schools,
right?
You kept sending him to these places to be around children, and he is a child predator.
Yeah.
And so you know,
yeah, but if they knew that, they wouldn't have, you'd think.
But they also had a lot of money invested in this guy too, so I mean, it's quite possible that you know, they want to know, and I'm not making any allegations, but is it, you know, we got so much money tied into this guy, let's make this go away, let's pretend it doesn't exist and move on. That's what they want to find out.
And where were her complaints of the family being in the commercials before?
Yeah, I mean, that's
I guess they don't want to be associated with him, but, you know, again, it seemed like she wasn't complaining about her kids and herself being featured in Subway commercials previously.
But at that point, the imagery around Jared wasn't the imagery it is now, too. So, I mean, that things may have changed a little bit.
I remember, Ryan, that for a while in Subway commercials, after we got to know Jared and his story, there was a wife alongside him in some of the ads, but I seem to think that it was a first wife. Had he been married prior to this wife?
Boy, that's a great question. I'm really not sure about that one. As far as who the image was in there, she says that
not
she was
just
using
an image, but an actual like person. It was Jared explaining how he and his wife eat healthily.
That's a great question. I know that they had two children together, Katie, who filed this lawsuit.
Heard.
And I do remember one ad campaign where it appeared to use his wife and children, but they seemed to be digital images.
Oh, maybe.
Like kind of cartoonish kind of things.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's what she's referencing in these commercials.
He did have two wives.
He did, right? Because I remember one, I got to meet him at another station. We interviewed him when I was working at another station, and he seemed to be the nicest man in the world.
Everybody thought
he really
that.
Did.
I mean, really.
But I remember asking him about his wife, and he said, "Yeah, that kind of fizzled out." So I didn't know if it was the same one, and maybe they reconnected.
Boy, you get deep down and personal with your questions.
Yeah, that was my only question for him.
So let's talk about your relationship.
Right. I went to the Diane Sawyer School of make your guests cry.
Very, very good.
Can you think of a person, a spokesperson for any company that was such a PR dream and a PR nightmare? His original story was the kind of thing that you can't write. I mean, for a company to say, we've got a guy who lost all this weight just eating our product, that's a dream come true. And then for it to end this way.
Yeah.
And I believe his close friend sent a letter to Subway saying, you know, I want to tell you about my friend. So he wasn't pitching himself to do it. He was just eating his wheat turkey sandwiches with no mayo or cheese and losing all this weight. And his friend's like, you guys, you got to jump on this. And he was like your everyman.
He was.
It was pretty perfect.
Yeah. And we don't really know when this kind of lifestyle, the lewd behavior began. I mean, some date it back to his time in college with some of the websites he was visiting and some of the things he was saying. We, you know, I mean, people visit websites. It's not illegal to do that kind of stuff, but some websites obviously would be pretty illegal to go to. But
and there was a friend of his that was in charge of one of his charity foundations or something, and they had figured out that this guy was a predator and then connected it all to Jared. Yeah,
Robert Taylor. He's behind bars right now, attempted suicide not long after his arrest. He faces obviously similar charges. His wife is actually was part of that lawsuit, that counter lawsuit. Remember, I think we had talked about this a couple weeks ago. Somebody had sued Jared. One of the victims had sued Jared, saying that essentially this created depression.
Yeah.
Jared Fogle's people, and I don't know if we've talked since then, Jared Fogle countersuing, saying, look, your life was pretty messed up before any of this happened, before you even realized I had videotaped you. Apparently had documentation of this this female suffering from depression prior to the allegations coming out. And that woman, that female, dropped her lawsuit. So it seemed to, at least the strong arm return seemed to work in that instance.
What a low tactic, though, to say to somebody suing you for this, oh no, your life was already screwed up. That's pretty low.
It was, and when you read the counter lawsuit, it was shocking. It's like, oh my gosh, you're suing back because you said that there was alcohol involved with the family, with the parents. Yeah. There was fighting, but
it went away though.
The fact that there was depression apparently prior to knowledge of the filming, I guess, was enough for this victim to stand down and say, yeah, all right, no lawsuit. So.
All right, so as it stands now, Jared Fogle's former wife is suing Subway. We don't have a court date. This lawsuit just took place.
No. And right now, they're for the most part, this is seeking information. They're just trying to dig in. This is kind of the first step. And in Indiana, they don't have to set a figure right now. We were seeking $1.5 million or anything like that. They don't have to do that. We don't even know what that monetary figure would be at this point.
Boy, this changes things a lot. If Subway was aware of some allegations and did nothing about it, we don't know that to be true, but it's certainly out there now.
I just don't know how, with just one, she had said there's at least one letter saying that he's got a problem like this. I don't know if that's enough when you consider the volume.
Well, if it's true, I would bet it would be enough, but how do they know it's even a victim?
Remember, when all this was coming down, there was an interview, too, with a woman who said that she knew Jared Fogle, and this may be what they're referring to. Do you remember that woman in Florida who said she met him? They continue to talk back and forth with each other, and some of the things he was saying was kind of disturbing. She worked for Subway at the time and kind of brought it up the chain of command. But, you know, once again, he said, she said situation.
Right.
So.
Right. Absolutely.
That's why you obey the law and don't do terrible things, because people are going to find out about it.
You'd think.
Seriously.
Yeah.
He had such a good gig going.
Yeah,
I mean,
think
really.
About what was at stake there. Yeah.
I mean, really, what's the hard work involved, of being the spokesman for Subway, other than going to school and seeing kids and talking about your story? Obviously, incredible lead up to that point as far as the weight loss, but I don't know.
How about that? Well, Ryan, thank you. We appreciate it. Yeah. That's Ryan Burrow telling us the story about Jared Fogle's ex-wife suing Subway. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I just wanted to tell you that my face no longer looks like a peach.
In other news,
I had peach fuzz.
You were going to go to a party. Last we spoke on Friday, you were going to go to what they call a threading party.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest, I only understood part of it, but I know the goal was
to remove hair from your eyebrows, your face, your mustachio region.
And that's the extent of it, right? It doesn't go beyond that.
No, that's just it. Upper body.
Upper body only.
Yeah, other things.
Was this party a success?
It was a total success.
You look smooth.
You know, it's funny. I have very blonde hair, but I had a lot of it. And this is why I know.
Because why?
Because went out to breakfast with my husband and said, hey, you didn't even notice my face was threaded. And he's staring at my cheek and he goes, I never really noticed hair on your face, but I'm noticing none right now.
Oh.
I said, okay,
progress.
Don't really know how to take that.
That's a compliment.
But Lisa DeCourcy has this little thing where you can make an appointment with her. She has a Facebook page, and you can book her to do eyebrows. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you have a monobrow that you would like. Let me see. You don't really.
I don't yet, but I'm hoping by the end of the year. You just have the one eyebrow.
So she does, it's like a threading party, and it was very fun.
How many women were in attendance?
There were six or seven people, and only three people got threaded.
The others just watched?
Dude, I got so threaded last night.
They came for the wine and merriment. And,
so it's like book club, but without
exactly.
Any... There's no books. Actually, I'll be honest. My wife's in a book club. I don't think they've ever read a book.
So
they just think they show up.
Were people standing around you drinking wine while you were being threaded?
Yeah. It's just my face.
Yeah, I know, but you're
not apprehensive
looking up
about
at them
that?
And...
I can hear. I don't have to look at people when they're talking. And they were having their own little conversations. And when I was finished with my threading, I joined them back to the group.
Yeah.
Did you have to talk a lot about your lips?
No. It's just so bizarre.
But normally, all things being equal, wouldn't that be the sort of thing that you'd prefer to do in a private setting? No?
No, I didn't have to take my clothes off.
No, I know that. But just it just seems...
My face got kind of red because they removed all the... facial hair, it's smooth, like
it
your Harry's
smooth.
Razors.
Yeah.
But mine will take like 8 weeks to grow back.
Oh. So, but
then it's party on.
Right.
Then we'll do another one. But now this girl, I thought it was pretty fascinating. I was talking to some of the moms that were there, and they said before homecoming, they had Lisa come to their house, and she brings her cotton thread, and she did it for some of the guys and the girls to get rid of the monobrow.
Men have it too.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah. Huh.
And bing, bang, boom. It's like tweezing. You go one hair at a time. This, you can go like 50 at a time if necessary.
Is it loud?
No.
It's not?
What do you, does it sound like a weed whacker? No, it's just thread.
I wasn't going to say a weed whacker, but it doesn't sound like a weed whacker, does it? It's quieter than that.
It's much quieter.
Sure.
But,
battery operated air.
I am hair free.
How long did it take? Is that personal? If
no,
that's personal,
I can't.
You don't have to answer it.
I started with my eyebrows, and then I said, could you do my mustache? And
yeah.
Then I said, she goes, do you want me to do the whole face? And I said, well, the fact that you asked, maybe
yeah.
we should.
So did you charge the other women who were just watching?
No,
oh,
I paid for my
them.
Own. Why? They didn't.
They got a show out of it.
They're not hairy.
Did anyone go, just give me like a Don Johnson. I just want stubble. I don't want to, I want some of it gone, but not all of it gone.
No, but it's pretty amazing. It's this... this Lisa who did it is an Indian, and she's from India, and she learned how to do it from her mom. She was born here, I think, but her mom
yeah.
wasn't. And her mom does her face. It's like, I said, how often do you have to do it? And she said, well, I do it frequently because this is what I do, you know, on
yeah.
the side. It's not her living. She works
oh.
somewhere.
Yeah.
But she just does weekend parties and weddings. Sometimes people
oh.
want it done.
For
Although,
not at the wedding,
well,
prior
would,
to a wedding.
Yeah, but she said she works Saturday mornings early, and I said, because you get a little red, so I think maybe you should do it a day before.
At least, yeah.
But she said, you know, what kind of businesswoman would I be if I said, you know, I'll do threading, and then I have a lot of facial hair.
Oh,
so
true.
Her mom does hers.
Oh.
It's just, it's amazing how they can take all that hair off in probably 10
yeah.
minutes.
Yeah. And then they take the hair and they make it into a sweater, you said? Did you say that, or am I imagining that?
There, you go to the Nordstrom building. There's a little kiosk where you can get threading done. I
oh,
mean,
yeah,
it's all
I know.
Over the place.
I know. It's popular. Very
but this
popular.
Is comes right to your house. Like, you know, you can
it's
have
a miracle.
It was pretty exciting.
Yep. You look very smooth.
Thank
You're welcome. I don't say that to just everybody.
I
you
know
that. All right. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Do we know what we're going to be for Halloween yet? I've come up with my costume.
And this is real, right? Because we were talking about whether or not any of us are going to dress up, and you are going to, huh?
Well, we're supposed to.
Yeah.
Kevin, you're going to dress up, aren't you, on Monday for our Halloween party here?
Sort of. I got a couple ideas.
I have a great idea, but I'm not telling anybody. I'm just going to do it.
What
you think
is
we'll
it?
Steal it?
No, but I don't want, because, you know, I don't want to blow the surprise
right
now.
All
right.
I've got mine.
Are you really dressing up?
We'll see.
Okay, Donald Trump.
I'm going to hold you in suspense.
All right.
I just want to know if you're dressing up.
Yeah, I have a costume idea.
All right. Well, last minute ideas. Bill, I thought I could help you.
Please.
The Red Eye, which I love to read, has given us some last minute ideas. You could go as, you could get four friends and go as the final five from Rio, the gymnasts.
Oh, right.
You'd look good in a leotard.
Thank you for that, by the way. Yeah, maybe.
A better one for you, one of the kids from Stranger Things.
I don't know that people would recognize who you were.
Oh, my God.
You think so? Just dressed like one of those kids from that show? I don't
sure,
think anyone would know.
If you shaved your head and went as...
My friend's doing that. He's got a buzzed head, and I asked him what he's doing. He said he's going to dress up as... Is it 19 or 13? What's her
13,
name?
13, the girl.
I thought that'd be pretty funny. Have like a little bloody nose streak and
it's
like
11,
a dress.
Guys. 13. Oh, is it 11?
We're adjusting for inflation.
They called her L.
Oh, that's right.
L13.
Bingo.
She's Latin.
Bingo.
All right.
Yeah, maybe. I just don't know if anyone would know who that was.
The kid with the curly hair and the baseball cap. You just put a curly wig under your baseball
All right,
cap
maybe
and
I'll
then
do that.
Talk like this, which is funny. You okay. could do that.
All right.
All right. What about Gene Wilder characters? Willy Wonka, Skip Donahue, Dr. Frankenstein, Waco Kid.
It would be an honor to dress in a Gene Wilder costume.
You couldn't do that because you'd be walking around being reverent all day.
I know. I know. That's true.
And what's different?
But a good,
than
I mean,
any other day?
Seriously,
I'm not
though,
worthy
that,
of this purple jacket.
That would be the one that is the most appealing to me. But I, as Steve said, it's too much of a tribute for me.
All right. Speaking of purple jacket, go as Prince. You can pay your respects and wear a Prince jacket.
I'm
you know,
too
purple.
Tall. I'd be like a giant Prince. Like Prince, if gamma rays attacked Prince. That's
You're not that much taller than he is.
He was like 5'2 or something, wasn't he?
I don't know.
I've got almost a foot on him.
Ryan Lochte, platinum hairspray, a Speedo, or goggles.
He keeps going back to that Speedo.
I might have one laying around from previous years.
Yeah, bring it in. There's nothing better than a slightly used
you
Speedo.
You could do a pair of toy handcuffs and a permanently bewildered facial expression, and you're good to go.
If I'm doing handcuffs, I'm not using toy handcuffs. I'm going all the way.
We can bring Dr. Ruth back in here. You can use her as a All prop right. in your costume.
Maybe. She could be Prince. That'd be a good costume for her. They're the same size. That would be a great costume for her.
Kevin, look up how tall Prince is. He wasn't that.
Prince was like, I think he was 5'4 or something. Seriously. It's really short.
Pokemon Go characters?
No. No.
Is anybody still playing that, Kevin? Are you?
Wendy, I'm too mature for that now. I moved on.
Kevin got married. He doesn't have time
yeah,
for that.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
His wife won't let him?
Nope.
Chicago TV shows. You can go from somebody from Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Chicago Justice, or go as Dick Wolf.
Prince was 5'2", by the way.
5'2"? Oh, right. That's exactly coochie, what I
coochie,
said.
Coochie, coochie, coo. Has anybody seen my Prince?
Kevin, could you call security?
Put the hair back in.
All right. How about going as Alexander Hamilton?
Well, that's as timely as could be. I don't know.
You could...
Boy, talk about a guy. That guy's popularity has surged more than anybody's in history, hasn't it?
Yep. You can wear Revolutionary-era breeches or a powdered wig.
All and right. then someone else could go, like, in a wheelchair as Raymond Burr. And then you could have the... Hamilton Burr duel.
Right. That's a good idea.
Thank you.
I know that only 1 in 1,000 people will get it, but if for that one person, they're going to love that.
You would do it.
I would do it.
You could go as Hillary or Donald, of course.
Not too contentious.
Go as a drone. Just tie a propeller
really?
On you, and then you can be a drone.
Get a little right. buzz going.
All right, maybe.
God, Bertrand, you're on fire. Go as Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant. The two of you can go together.
Put yeah, I would think any Cub-related uniform this year or a costume would be very popular.
Did you see they're showing or selling T-shirts that say Rizzo Bryant 16,
yes.
Chicago great again?
Yes. Very funny.
I love that.
Very, very funny.
You could go as Guaranteed Rate Stadium. the worst sports arena name ever conceived.
So you, what would you do? Like build
just hang
a styrofoam
the sign
mock-up
of Guaranteed Rate on you,
and then put no one inside.
Oh, God. That was.
Did you have a liquid lunch today?
Am I wrong?
No.
That was a shot fired directly at your hull. By the way, you
care.
Know that, right?
Yeah, whatever.
Fire right at your
hull.
Bobby hull.
Hi, Grace.
Hi, I think that Bill should go as a goat.
A billy goat.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
All right, so yeah, that's, I mean, if I was going to dress up, truth be told, Grace, I don't think I'm going to. I don't
because
want
Bill
to.
Because Bill doesn't like to have fun.
I love fun. I'm the king of fun, but I don't know that a costume leads to it. But a goat is that's not a bad idea. I like that idea.
I should have saved the hair from my...
from your threading?
My threading party.
Are you dressing up, Grace, this Halloween?
No, but my dog is going as Ken Bone.
Your dog is going as Ken Bone?
That's great.
Oh, that's so funny.
You got a little red sweater for him?
Yes, he's adorable. And some glasses.
That's a great costume. Good for you. Well played.
Hey, Bill.
Yeah.
I've been looking everywhere for the lyric to the My Favorite Cup song, and I can't find the lyrics anywhere.
Oh, I'm trying to think of where the lyrics would be.
In your pocket?
Probably in my pocket somewhere. Let me see. Can I ask a favor?
On the webpage.
Stay on the line, and we'll give your information to Kevin, and I'll get you a copy of the lyrics.
We should put it on Facebook. I thought you were going to do that. Are you worried someone's going to steal it?
Yeah, I'm
worried. And record it?
That the New Colony 6 will steal my song. Yeah.
I really like it.
Oh, well, thank you. All right, I can get you the lyrics. We'll get you the lyrics.
You should post them.
Should I put them on Facebook?
It's up to you, but no one's going to steal it. Really, trust me on that one.
Thank you. All right.
I'll
put it up. Grace, you can steal it. I'll put it up there tomorrow. Because I don't have them with me today, but I'll bring them in tomorrow, all right?
Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Have a great week.
All right.
If somebody has a number one hit with that, Wendy, I will never speak to you again. John Mayer's been on me for weeks to get the lyrics to that song, and I don't want him to have a big hit with it.
My favorite costume idea from the Red Eye, by the way.
Yes.
Go as the Lucas Museum. You can print out some Star Wars photos.
Yeah.
And you could, you know, have the parking lot on one side and some Star Wars paraphernalia on your body and go what would have been the great museum that isn't there.
Could I have my friends dress like friends of the park and just keep hitting me with sticks? Like wherever I go, just keep whacking me with a stick.
That is a great idea.
That is a good idea.
And the little comic they have is, you know, half... what's his name? Harrison Ford was Han Solo and Raiders of the Lost Ark. They have him half and half costume.
Oh, so he's half Han Solo and half Indiana Jones?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
To represent the Lucas Museum. That would really be good.
That's excellent.
And then you could do a Norman Rockwell pose as well.
Right. All right. Sold.
It's an idea.
You found a costume.
People have some ideas, not necessarily for you.
But for anybody who needs a last minute.
I have mine.
You're covered. All right. If somebody has an idea or needs an idea, we're at 312-981-7200. Last minute Halloween costumes, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Go as Grandpa.
Grandpa Munster?
Yeah.
All right.
No, just your grandpa.
My grandfather? That was a popular costume, remember, for years. Bill's grandpa costume.
It's Bill and Wendy. We were talking about the Red Eyes idea and some last-minute Halloween costume ideas.
It's a week
ideas.
Away. It's a week from today.
Oh,
that's how fast.
I'm ready. I got stuff. We had mentioned the Lucas Museum, but Doug, you have an idea how to pull this one off?
Yeah, it's the cheapest costume of all. All you do is fight real hard to get on the guest list. You RSVP and you don't show up.
That's easy. All right. Done.
Okay. I don't get it.
Well, they fought hard to get to Chicago. They said they were coming to Chicago.
Yeah.
They're not coming.
Yeah.
They're not coming. Right.
Not their fault.
Yeah,
obviously.
They wanted to come.
They wanted to, right.
Yeah, I don't get that one. Maybe this one. Rita, you have an idea?
Yes. A vending machine. You take brown paper bags that don't have grocery store advertisements on it. You fit it to yourself with the opening in the back. Then you take snack packs of chips and stuff like that, and you put them on it, you know, all over the front.
Yes.
With a sticker of a price, and then a place where people can put their money.
Mm-hmm.
You can stick a dollar there. You got a vending machine.
Seems easy.
It does seem
easy. Have you done this before? Have you ever tried this, Rita?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
I've made it for my kids, made it for myself, made it for my mother.
Yeah.
There's only one problem. I went to a Halloween party with adults. One guy came up to me and smashed all my chips. So what I did, when his kids came Halloweening, I gave them back.
Revenge is sweet, isn't it?
Boy, you held on to that a long time to get revenge. I'm proud of you.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. But it's so easy to do. So there you go.
The vending machine. All right. Well, thank you very
much. Thank you, Rita. And another idea, maybe for you, maybe for someone listening who hasn't decided what they want to be next week. Bob, you have an idea?
a chicken cordon bleu. You put a blue sweatshirt on, take a rubber chicken, tie it up with an extension cord around yourself and your chicken cordon bleu.
I like that. That's simple enough. Well, thank you.
Bye-bye.
There was a kid in our house, not last Halloween, but the year before that, and he was a bubblegum machine, and he had this giant dome over his head and then little plastic balls, all different colors, and they had painted him yellow or green, I don't remember. But that, and it said 5 cents on the plastic around his head. That was really cool.
Here's a great idea for a kid, which I was going to see if my son Dylan wants to be. Go as Joel Quenneville. I went to a school thing. Boy, this must have been 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And there was just some little kid. He was probably a first grader, and he had a suit on, and they gave him a big, thick mustache.
That's excellent.
And they made a Stanley Cup out of aluminum foil, and he carried it, and it was awesome.
With a stern look in
his
face. Yeah,
he did not smile at all.
Boy, that's a good one. That's a great one for a little kid.
That's pretty good. Somebody said if you don't want to dress up, just go as a creepy clown. I don't know. That sounds like
I don't
a
normally dress like a creepy clown. I do on occasion, but not always.
Went to a party and somebody came as Wrigley Field, had vines and a big piece of cardboard, wearing a Cubs hat and a W flag.
That could be inventive. I like that.
Bill, wear a shirt with a British flag on it and hang an exit sign around your neck. You can be Brexit.
Oh, Brexit, sure. All right. I will take that under advisement.
I should go as Bill, and you should go as Justin Kaufman.
How does that equal out?
I don't know.
9 times out of 10, it would be you dressed as me and me dressed as you. I don't know why. I don't know how Justin Kaufman figured in, but all right.
We should get Bertrand in it.
Yeah.
Somebody said just 3 different colored pieces of paper, and then we go 3 sheets to the wind. You, me, and Steve can each wear a sheet of any color paper and go as 3 sheets to the wind.
But that would only make sense if the 3 of us were together all day. As soon as you separate, that one doesn't make sense anymore. Although you could say some people don't give 2 sheets. That also works.
All right, I'll do that one with you. Right. I already have a costume. I don't need yours.
Is it? Can I ask a hint on this? Is it a character that we all know in person that you're going to be on Monday?
It's not a character. It's a real person.
It's a real person, but is it somebody that we know?
Oh, yeah.
It is. All right.
Who is it?
I think I know.
Who?
Well, somebody that day could potentially be celebrating their final day at the station. Right?
Does that have any? I'm not doing that.
You're not? All right.
Is it your last day?
No, it's not my last day. Is it? Is it?
God, I hope
Maybe
not.
Maybe I will dress up. No, but I believe our boss, that might be his last day. Jimmy said...
I think that was a secret.
Oh, is it? Oh, well then, what are you talking about? First I'm hearing about it. I thought you might be paying tribute to him by dressing like him.
No, I'm not.
All right.
I don't have good enough clothes to be him.
I know. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Ro and Ann are going to have a show today, Wendy, as it turns out. I'm looking at the schedule. They'll be on. They've got a show coming up. Perhaps they'll tell us what to expect on that show. That's coming up in just a minute or two. Stay here. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.